So there must be another cabinet minister on the hook for property problems, shall we say. The Daily Mail has discovered that Rachel Reeves, or possibly the people that she has paid to take care of such matters, have not taken care of the £900 licence that she should have in order to rent out the family home. There's a danger of footballification. Of course there is. If only they could all move into the garden of a friendly billionaire, rent-free, as Boris Johnson did after leaving Downing Street, they wouldn't have these problems. But in this case, how big is the problem for you?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Keir Starmer has ruled out an investigation into Rachel Reeves' breaking of local housing rules. The Chancellor's admitted she didn't obtain the required selective rental licence for her home in South London last year. The Prime Minister's backed her after consulting his ethics adviser. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has told supporters this morning that it's more mess from Labour.
Just this morning we've seen the news. Rachel Reeves apparently has broken a law, just like Angela Rayner before her and Louise Blahague before her. All we see is the Labour cabinet making mistakes, breaking laws. If the Chancellor can't even get it on top of her own paperwork, how is she going to get on top of the country's paperwork?
And Kemi Badenoch will be taking your calls with Ian Dale on LBC this evening from 7. LBC has learned a leading online pharmacy allowed a severely anorexic woman to buy weight loss jabs. Newman didn't stop the prescription even after the woman's mother asked them to. Helen Hoddenott has the exclusive story.
Caitlin is in her 20s and has been suffering with anorexia for over a decade, leaving her mum, Debbie, fearing for her life. We've changed the names and voices to protect their anonymity.
I've been told by every practitioner that works with her that she is at serious risk of death.
Caitlin managed to buy Wegovy online by using an AI-generated image, despite a requirement for robust checks to be in place for providers selling high-risk drugs. And Newman only agreed to terminate the prescription when LBC got in touch. The company's apologised and says it'll bring in extra verification tools to avoid a repeat.
Five more people have been arrested in the investigation into the heist at the Louvre. The Paris prosecutor says they were detained in the city last night. The crown jewels taken earlier this month remain missing. Donald Trump says he will cut tariffs on goods from China by 10% following his meeting with President Xi in South Korea. It's an easing of trade tensions between the world's two largest economies. Beijing has agreed to allow the export of rare earth elements. A new study suggests prostate cancer screening can reduce deaths by 13%. The idea is being considered in the UK, with a decision expected before the end of the year. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 55 points at 9,700, and the pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, a dry, bright but chilly morning for many, becoming wet and windy and cloudier from the west later, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Simon Conway.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Quite a lot to get through today, including a visit to the studio by a gentleman who is rather prominent in the news at the moment. I wonder if you can guess who it is. I'll tell you later. I'm almost tempted to go back to that story that Nick was discussing. It's not exactly in the deep end of current affairs when you look at some of the stuff particularly that's happening in America at the moment, but you can't exist on a diet of... I don't know, heavy fodder. It's not even a phrase. You cannot exist on a diet of seriousness alone. We all need to have our diet leavened slightly by levity, don't we? But I don't know. Stay tuned to find out whether we return to dog poo bag gate. later in the show. I have got a roundup. I'm going to try and do it without Simon Marks's help today, because the three or four stories that have emerged across the Atlantic in the last 24 hours are arguably even more troubling than the three or four that emerged yesterday and the day before and the day before that. Let me run one by you before we get stuck into the conversation of the day. If there are terrorists in your country, or if somebody, for example, turns up at the home of a prominent politician with weapons, and two prosecutors, state prosecutors, government prosecutors, federal prosecutors, are very keen to bring that person to trial. Two state prosecutors think that a man who turned up at the home, say, of a former president in possession of two guns, hundreds of rounds of ammunition and a machete, who do you think should be punished? The state prosecutors that want to bring him to trial, or the man, arguably a terrorist, who turned up at the home of a former president of the United States in possession of two guns and hundreds of rounds of ammunition as well as a machete at an address that had shortly before been posted by the current president of the United States of America on social media? I'm not even exaggerating. I think you owe it to yourself to stay tuned to find out a little bit more about that story. I've got a magnificent example of media bias, misinformation, call it whatever you will, involving a man who cannot be reported honestly by almost all of the UK media because he's heavily involved in the phone hacking case. And that is something for which you can never be forgiven by Fleet Street, even if you are, a very senior member of the royal family. And indeed, my guest later in the programme is somebody whose activities will never be fairly or honestly reported by the British media because he is also very heavily involved in the phone hacking cases. I'll give you another little clue. It's not Hugh Grant. You've probably worked it out by now. Okay. Did you know that the morning after the European Union referendum, the morning after Brexit, one of the most Googled terms in the United Kingdom was what is the European Union, or what does leaving the European Union mean? One of my colleagues on the sort of online side of LBC, which is now, I think, by far the biggest department in the building, absolutely dominating everything. They've got more staff than, Sainsbury's. He tells me that this morning lots of people, well, pretty much every landlord in the country is Googling. I'll tell you how much staff they've got on the online department, almost as much as the news agents. It's absolutely extraordinary. You should see the birthday present. You have a whip round on this show. Keith puts a button in the tin and rattles it to make it sound like lots of coins. Eleanor asks to borrow a fiver off me. And Rebecca very generously puts in as much as she can afford. Obviously, if I'm getting a present for the team, I might slip a 50 into the envelope. But goodness me, the presents you get if you work on the newsagents or the online side of LBC are absolutely extraordinary. You'd only have to take a pound off everybody and you'd have enough to buy a hamper from Fortnum & Mason's. But anyway, I digress. That's a little bit of radio there designed entirely for the amusement of people sitting upstairs from this studio and absolutely pointless for absolutely everybody else tuned in. So 1.396777 million people wondering what the hell I'm talking about, which means it must be 8 minutes after 10 on a Thursday morning. Because what I am talking about is the number of landlords this morning who have Googled, do I need a license for my home? And is that the sound of footballification that I hear coming over the hill? Because I don't know. I'm pretty sure this is not a very big deal. But I could be wrong. In the immediate moment of the Angela Rayner story breaking, and it broke when I was on holiday, so I give myself a little bit of leeway to have been a bit wrong about that. But as soon as I was across the facts, I arrived at the conclusion that the Prime Minister's ethics advisor arrived at long before the Prime Minister's ethics advisor arrived at it, which was that it is clear that you should have got more advice from more qualified people about this quite, is recondite the right word? This quite complicated element of property law. You should have got better advice from somebody very specifically qualified in this area of property law. And while that might be forgivable for an ordinary mortal, it is not forgivable for a deputy prime minister who is required to abide by a very tightly codified code of conduct. So I just remind you, in case that is the trumpet of footballification that we hear popping in the distance, I remind you that I was very much, and very reluctantly, because I think she's a great politician and a lovely woman, but I was very reluctantly persuaded that Angela Rayner's position became untenable as soon as it emerged that she had not sought all of the proper advice that she could have and should have sought. Could you explain footballification for a new listener, asks Jess. Jess, I am here to serve. I am here to serve. Footballification is the idea that if you're watching a football game and your defender cynically and deliberately breaks the legs of an opposition attacker who didn't even have the ball at the time, then if the referee dares to blow his whistle and show a red card, it is absolutely proof that the referee is completely biased, because anyone with eyes can see that the defender who has just broken the legs of a rival player who didn't even have the ball at the time did absolutely nothing wrong, because the colour of his shirt is blue and the colour of my scarf is blue, and therefore I will never, ever, ever, ever criticise or question what has been done by the bloke in blue. And similarly, if my shirt is red and I and my scarf is red, then my team can never do anything. So your team can never do anything right and my team can never do anything wrong. It is one of the most thankless tasks. One of the most thankless tasks in the British media to resist footballification, because nobody else does. So there is absolutely no point doing it. Shall I give you an example? Let me read you a message that's already come in this morning from Nick. So you listening to this programme, if you think you can hear the sounds of footballification tootling or parping in the distance, then you are possibly going to be a little bit surprised that Nick has got in touch to say, another day, another phone in bashing Labour. So Nick tunes into the same programme that you tune into every day, and he hears somebody deliberately and routinely and daily bashing Labour. Here's my daily message, he writes. Starmer and his government have delivered a 28% increase for resident doctors, an increase to the minimum wage, £7,500 of free childcare, the rolling out of breakfast clubs, 5 million extra NHS appointments, the removal of non-dom status. That might have been the last lot, actually, but I'll continue. VAT on private schools, the Hillsborough Law, a UK wealth fund, trains coming back under public ownership, a new border security commander, GB Energy has set up a strategic defence review, easy for you to say, within the first year. The football governance bill, the sentencing review, reductions in cost of school uniforms, £200 limit on soft shoplifting prosecution being removed, an independent ethics and integrity commission giving the vote to 16 to 18 year olds, removing hereditary peers, protecting shop workers from threats and violence, banning trail hunting, removing the use of offshore trusts to avoid inheritance tax, the restoration of mandatory housing targets, and there is more. Happy to point that out, because for everyone who accuses me of footballification in one direction, there'll be someone accusing me of footballification in another direction. So I am conscious that the contempt, for want of a slightly milder word, that I feel at the appalling excesses and obvious corruption of many of the previous inhabitants of Downing Street, most obviously the period in which it became the address at which COVID laws were more egregiously and more frequently broken than at any other address in the country, I worry genuinely that sometimes I may allow my political loyalties to cloud my judgment. Nobody else worries about that. You could be a Boris Johnson cheerleader pretending today that Rachel Reeves has done something hideously and heinously wrong, although you had absolutely nothing to say about his multiple breaches of every rule under the sun. By the time he left Downing Street, he didn't even have a standards and ethics advisor, because the previous two, count them, one, two, had resigned in disgust at his behaviour and his contempt for both integrity and ethics. I don't know how that works. Morally, intellectually, professionally, I don't know how that works. I don't know how you can have been supremely untroubled by a man who was so contemptuous of ethics and integrity that he ended up without having anybody overseeing it for him. Liz Truss didn't even bother to replace or appoint anybody to the role. And yet think that there's something horribly wrong about people who, when it appears that they've made a terrible mistake, immediately refer themselves to the ethics and integrity advisor. Just think about that for a minute. That's not footballification. That's saying two people should be judged by the same rules. If you are believed to have done something wrong, then you ask the independent ethics and integrity advisor to look into it and determine whether or not you are culpable. And they decided that Angela Rayner was. As it stands, unless Rachel Reeves has lied about anything, I confidently predict that the independent ethics advisor will come back and say there is not really very much to see here. But I've been wrong in the past and I will probably be wrong again in the future. What do you think about this story? Do you know the facts? Didn't Jeremy Hunt just forgot to declare a bunch of flats that he owned? But the newspapers that are going after Rachel Reeves as if she has, killed the Queen Mother, that they have very little to say. They had very little to say about Jeremy Hunt's missteps in the property market. And for the record, I think they were missteps, looking back at that story. So, the family home in Dulwich in South London rented out last year because she moved with her family into number 11 Downing Street. The four-bedroom house was put on the market via an agent, and that is, she thought, the end of the story. Southwark Council is a local authority that requires private landlords in certain areas to obtain what's called a selective licence to rent out their property. But last night she admitted that she was unaware of the licensing requirement and has now applied for one. That, as far as I can tell, is the extent of the story. And it could be that you're listening to the same words that I'm listening to, and you are hearing evidence of an appalling and egregious breach. You may even have persuaded yourself that £900 is a significantly large sum of money for the Chancellor of the Exchequer to have jeopardised her career in order to avoid paying. If you believe that, you should probably give your head a wobble. I don't know that anybody can meaningfully argue that this is anything other than a genuine mistake. But I'm not allowed to make genuine mistakes at work without sanction, without recourse. You know, if it is a mistake of significant size, then there are penalties and punishments and requirements that would immediately kick in. I don't know whether you think this one fits into that category. Cammy Badenoch, whose daily contribution to the realms of ridiculousness is something that we can all be grateful for, has described this as very serious revelations. Very serious revelations. Says somebody supremely untroubled by a boss whose behaviour was so appalling that two independent ethics advisers resigned in disgust. If the Chancellor has been profiting from illegally renting out her house, that would make her position extremely tenuous. So, £900. A significant sum of money, apparently, in the event of this story being as serious as Kemi Badenoch attests. I just want to know what you think. I'm presuming, I should have triple-checked this before I came on air, but I'm presuming that she rented it out via an estate agent. It's very hard not to. Yes, it is. So there you go. That, for me, is the clincher. Have you ever rented out a property? Have you? Okay. You go to the lettings agent. This is my genuine position on this, and I am absolutely confident this is completely devoid of footballification, all right? I don't really want to speak to people whose opinion on a story like this is determined by the party that the politician belongs to. This is why I mentioned Angela Rayner at the outset. If you are paying a lettings agency anything up to 15%, I think, of the total rent, to just take care of everything. I've rented properties where I never knew the landlord's name, even. You deal entirely and exclusively with the lettings agency. And the same is true the other way round. The landlord may not even know your names. You've been assured that the references have checked out, but the reason why you're taking a fairly significant slice of cash out of the rent is because you are taking care of everything. The boiler goes, you ring the lettings agency. Bailiffs turn up because the previous tenants owed money, you ring the lettings agency. Something goes wrong, you ring the lettings agency. And from a landlord's point of view, the boiler's gone. The lettings agency will deal with it. Some bailiffs have turned up because of some debts run up by the previous tenants. The
Letting agency will deal with it. We need a new radio. The lettings agency will deal with it. You need a license to rent out in this area where we work renting things out. The lettings agency will deal with it. That, to me, at 19 minutes after 10 this morning, seems to be the beginning, the middle and the end of the story. Because if I am paying you to do something and you don't do it, that is not my fault. Discuss. 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
This is the 810 to Birmingham New Street. Calling at organise to-do list. Call your PA. Shoot off a few emails. Close laptop. Head to the shop. Man behind the counter seems like a good egg. Thinking of eggs, one breakfast butty, please.
Business travel by train is time well spent with Avanti West Coast.
Please stand clear of the gap.
Another morning, another reminder there's a gap to be careful of. But maybe it's time to bridge the one between your 9-to-5 and your dream of living life on your own terms. At HSBC, we know ambition looks different to everyone. Whether it's retiring early or leaving more for your family, we can help. Because when it comes to unlocking your money's potential, we know wealth. Search HSBC Wealth today. HSBC UK. Opening up a world of opportunity. HSBC UK current account holders only.
Every neighbour got their flavour.
Oh, yeah.
Did somebody say just me?
Emergency at 23. Aoife's extended family. Can she get a rewind?
No.
Nappies, coffee, rolls to go. Nate States in a hot mess. No chili, it's an SOS. Major cook up. We saw ya. Let me call the reinforcements for ya.
Whoever you are, whatever your flavour.
Every neighbour got their flavour. Did somebody say just me?
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
21 minutes after 10. Press record. Well, you don't need to, can you? Because you can rewind and pause live radio. But these are the circumstances in which Rachel Reeves's position becomes untenable. Okay? If the letting agency told her that she needed a license to rent out her property. If the lettings agency told her that she might need a license and she'd have to look into it for herself, which is kind of the parallel with the Angela Rayner scenario, then she will, I believe, have put herself in a position that becomes untenable. But if she has done neither of those things, then this is a whole heap of nothing. Unless, of course, you disagree. Susan Bromley. Sue, what made you pick up the phone?
Well, to put it into context, first of all, I've been having sleep this night since Rachel Reeves' budget last year, because we run a family business, so I am no fan of Rachel Reeves.
Fair enough.
However, the exact same thing happened to me with Suffolk Council.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah. So,
oh, you're not going to kill this phone in stone dead, are you, with the first call of the morning, Sue? So. I hate Rachel Reeves, but the same thing happened to me.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, my mum went into care, and yes, we had a council flat which she bought through the right to buy in Suffolk Council. And we rented it out to help pay her care home fees.
Yes.
We used a very reputable letting agency, and I obviously won't say their name, but they charged over the odds.
How much? Just out of interest.
Oh, I think it was like about 9% at the time. It was really high.
It's a fair old chunk of change, isn't it? For ideally doing nothing. That's the best case scenario for everybody, is that nothing needs to be done, but we'll take 9% of the rent anyway.
Exactly. Because me and my brother had never rented property before, yep, we just wanted someone who would take care of it all, who we didn't want to have to worry about things, just get a check-in at the end of the month, give it straight to the care home. They did all of the money laundering checks to make sure we had the right to rent it out, you know, power of attorneys and everything like that. Nothing was mentioned about a license. And it wasn't until much later that we found out we should have had a license. And fortunately, we managed to get it all sorted out.
How did you find out?
I think I, as power of attorney, got a letter, but I can't remember if it was direct from Suffolk Council or it came via the letting agency. But I do remember at the time because I'm financial director of a company,
yes.
I have to be so careful that I do any kind of, you know, if any of the companies we work for do due diligence, my records have to be clean.
Of course.
So I'm not saying I'm like the Chancellor, but, you know...
But I mean, the bottom line here is, and I think it's going to take some pretty heavy lifting to challenge this conclusion, is that you were perfectly within your rights to presume that the people you were paying to take care of everything were taking care of everything.
Yeah, you would have thought that they would have said to me, you need a license.
I wonder if it's the same letting agency.
Well, do you know what? It wouldn't surprise me because it is a very fashionable, well-known...
A big one in the area as well.
Yes.
Well, I tell you what, will you tell the producer which one it was? Off air, and I'll never refer back to it at all, and then I'll ask someone to ask someone who's got contacts in the upper... And just for my own curiosity, Sue, and then I'll use a code word on the programme for you and you alone tomorrow. I will I will insert the word hamburgers into tomorrow's programme if I have managed to establish that it was actually the same lettings agency. But that's just between you and me, all right? No one else will know what's going on there.
Yes. And if you will let me say this,
of course.
When she made a lot of her changes in the budget last year to family farms and to family businesses, I don't think she did much research or due diligence because she would have really understood how it's going to impact us. So maybe that's how she rolls.
Well, you mean she rolls like you?
Possibly.
No, I hear you, and I want you to make that point. I'm grateful to you for ringing in, and it's important to establish, I think, in the interests of resisting footballification, that you would welcome the opportunity to give her a bit of a kicking if you felt it was fair.
Yes, exactly that. I'm no fan of her, but I do feel on this occasion...
I don't know how anyone...
Exactly
that. I should probably get... If it is the same lettings agency, you can have a silent Ray Liotta. All right, the honour that we reserve for people whose contribution to the programme could not actually be more highly qualified. We'll try and keep her on the line and just get the name of the lettings agency, and then we'll try and put it to one of Rachel Reeves's people, and then no one else will know what's going on. But if I say hamburgers on the programme tomorrow, then it will actually... Or even later today, if we can get a quick heads up on what the letting agency was, then we will have solved the problem and indeed ended the phone-in at 26 minutes after 10 on Thursday morning. Happily, we haven't yet... Should we have a look at some text? Stevie, you're up next. Steve, rather. Maybe you're a Stevie, but it doesn't say that on the screen. At what point does this nonsense stop, asks Linda. I'm sick and tired of this constant badgering. It's so obvious to me why certain parts of the media are going after Labour, but at what point does it stop? This is a nonsense. I think you're correct, says Roger. This probably was a genuine mistake by the Chancellor, but that's not the problem. It's the fact that she's trying to blame the lettings agent for that mistake. Shades of Angela Rayner, I feel. Good morning to you, James. Well, good morning to you, Roger. But I think the opposite is true. If it is on the letting agent, then that is precisely what the ethics advisor will establish. So the only shade of Angela Rayner is the immediate referral to the independent advisor, which I would remind you, a lot of people on the right of British media and British politics are very exercised by today, while they were supremely unconcerned when their hero Boris Johnson saw two ethics advisors resign in disgust at his contempt for ethics. That's what footballification looks like. This is outrageous. This is outrageous. She's the Chancellor of the Exchequer. How can this happen? Oh, you remember when Boris Johnson's ethics advisors resigned twice because yeah, that was great. That was funny, wasn't it? He's such a lad. He's such a top bloke. I love him. Yeah, we're going for lunch tomorrow. That was really funny when Boris Johnson's ethics advisors resigned. Two of them, not just one, two of them because he was, you know, doing up his flat and lying about it, pretending he'd lost a phone. Can't even remember what the other was. Scandal after scandal after scandal. But none of it mattered because I love Boris. That's footballification, in case there was still any confusion. Steve's in Manchester. Steve, what would you like to say?
You know, James, only my older brother ever calls me Stevie. It's very comforting to hear.
Isn't that nice? There you go. I don't know why I sensed there was a Stevie in there somewhere, Steve. Carry on, mate.
There is a Stevie there. So I am a private landlord. I've got 8 properties at the moment. I don't use a rental agency, and the reason why I don't use that is they have such an appalling reputation within the industry for incompetence and dishonesty. They employ unqualified, generally very young people, presumably to keep the costs low, and the, like I say, the level of competence is awful. The amount of trouble that they get their clients into for doing much, much worse than this.
Yeah.
It's just shocking, and I won't touch them, and I feel for Rachel.
And, I mean, it's the relatively simple presumption that someone as experienced as you might know to be naive, but someone with little or no experience of doing this, like Sue, and I think like Rachel Reeves, would be, hang on, they're the professionals. They will be better at this than I could be. Therefore, it's worth paying them 9% or 10% of the overall income.
And that's a really good point. You have to be inside the industry to have this knowledge. You know, I'm sure that you know of appallingly, but man, I was going to say appallingly bad radio presenters. We all
know
them.
A few. I think we all know what you're thinking.
We don't know. But you will know things that we don't know because you're on the inside and we're on the outside and we have no idea. So yes, people go into this assuming competence, assuming professionalism, and I'm sure there are many competent professionals out there, but we are not talking about the minority.
To build up a little bit of tension, the guest I've got coming in at 11:45 is caught up in a legally fraught situation at the moment. So I do phone upstairs. I take advice from people whose purview that is, whose field of expertise that is, before I conduct the interview, knowing exactly where and what is permissible and exactly where and what isn't from the experts. And then if I don't breach any of the advice that they've given me, and yet it turns out that we have made a mistake, that's their fault. It, albeit that I would publicly be on the hook for it, I have trusted the experts. And that's all she has done, really.
But then,
the paid experts.
But then in those circumstances, we acknowledge what we've done wrong, we apologise, we put
well,
it right, we need putting right, and we move on.
And well, she hasn't even moved on. She's handed it to the independent advisor on ethics and integrity, because we've got one now. I can't remember which prime ministers it was who'd never even bothered having one. But and that is why Angela Rayner ended up having to walk the plank, because there was more advice she should have sought, and she kind of was made aware of the fact that there was more advice she should have sought, because the lawyer she went to was not properly qualified in that field. But you can't really argue that a letting agent is not really properly qualified. A letting agent in a specific area is not really properly qualified to let properties in that specific area. At least I don't think you can. Unless your scarf is tied so tightly around your neck that it's cut off the flow of blood to your head. Here's Simon Conway with your headlines.
The Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has told LBC Rachel Reeves should resign if she has committed an offence. The Chancellor has admitted she failed to obtain the required selective rental licence for her family home. Sir Keir Starmer says an investigation is not necessary. LBC has learned one of the UK's biggest online pharmacies sold a weight loss jab to a severely anorexic woman. The company, Newman, has apologised and promised to bring in tougher verification checks. New figures show nearly 40,000 prisoners in England and Wales have been let out of jail under the early release scheme. It was introduced by the government in September last year to help ease overcrowding in prisons. LBC weather, a dry, bright but chilly morning for many, becoming wet and windy and cloudier from the west later, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Harwoods, we know your car says a lot about you. Maybe that you like to make an entrance, or you'd rather make your escape. That you want to cut a dash, or just cut your emissions. That you like to take the bends, or bring your four-legged friends. Whatever, we speak your language. Come and have a chat at Harwoods Audi Crawley and Five Oaks, and Harwoods Volvo Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. Harwoods, family-owned since 1931.
Sandy!
Wes! You're looking chirpy.
I'm off on a tour of London with my mates. Got a great deal of SWR rewards.
Ooh, not bad. I got a deal on theatre and dinner, so I'm taking my girlfriends.
You are such a culture vulture.
Wes!
Make every trip a treat with SWR rewards. Book a train from Chilworth today to claim yours. Southwestern Railway. Spread your wings. T's and C's apply.
You never forget the dogs you've loved. They have the power to steal our hearts, to love us unconditionally,
and be there for us when we need them most without saying a word. You understand how a dog can change a life. A guide dog can transform the life of someone living with sight loss. Will you help change someone else's life with a gift in your will to guide dogs? Request our free will guide today. Search Guide Dogs Free Wills.
Guide Dogs.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:34 is the time. You've got footballification. You've also, of course, got whataboutery. But the parameters of footballification and whataboutery are sometimes a bit hard to pin down. Is it whataboutery, for example, for a number of texters to remind me about the time that Kemi Badenoch hacked into Harriet Harman's website, a criminal offence by any measure that she was too dozy to realise she probably shouldn't have coughed to in public? Is it a criminal? Is it whataboutery to remind people of the property arrangements or the housing arrangements of various people on the right of British politics that didn't cause much excitement or exercise much pearl clutching on the right of the British media? I actually don't know. And listen, is it whataboutery to remember that not that long ago Nigel Farage claimed he'd bought a house he hadn't bought? Because his partner, who was previously so skint that she had to work as a waitress, was suddenly rich enough to buy a lovely house with a swimming pool in Frinton-on-Sea, in the middle of the Clacton constituency that he hardly ever seems to spend any time in anyway. So I don't know if it's whataboutery. He's not Chancellor of the Exchequer. So the standard of scrutiny will always be higher for people in power. Except, of course, it won't, will it? Because the Conservative Prime Minister, whose conduct was so awful and egregious that his independent ethics advisers resigned twice, was the darling and the... In fact, he went on to get a column, a highly paid column, in precisely the same newspaper that today is attacking Rachel Reeves for not knowing that she should have had a licence to rent out her home and immediately referring herself to the independent adviser on ethics and integrity when it was pointed out to her. So if you're Boris Johnson, you get hundreds of thousands of pounds a year off the newspaper that wants politicians to obey the rules or to display ethics and integrity. If you're Rachel Reeves, you get a coating for referring yourself to precisely the individual that Boris Johnson had two, or precisely the office that Boris Johnson saw two incumbents of resign in disgust at his conduct. So that's not whataboutery, is it? That's a very important illustration of double standards so huge that you can see them from space. Two-tier. Or is it? I don't know. Richard's in Broadstairs. Richard, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Good morning.
I've never called in this before, so...
Why not? Why not?
Pleasure to speak to you.
Why not?
I've never had the knowledge on a particular topic that I thought would be useful to share.
Well, it never stops anyone else. Certainly doesn't stop me, Richard. Carry on.
Okay, so I'm an expert advisor on property licensing.
Yes. Okay, well, that'll do. Fill your boots.
So, interestingly, Southwark Council, I advise on schemes across, particularly across London, but Southwark Council actually have four licensing schemes.
Good Lord.
For properties. So they have a mandatory HMO licensing scheme, which applies across the whole of England.
Don't lose the room, Richard, but carry on.
No, and then they have additional and two selective licensing schemes. And it's one of their selective licensing schemes this case is about.
Yes.
So the onus is on the landlord and their managing agent in the law to apply for the relevant licence before they let the property.
But the landlord can't apply for it if they haven't been made aware of the need to do so by the person. I'm going to quote from a local landlord, not necessarily the one that Rachel Reeves used, but the contract for letting services or managed service would include clarity on legal compliance. This is what the agent provides to the landlord. Clarity on legal compliance and health and safety matters, and arrangement and renewal of all legislative and safety checks. So if they've done that and she hasn't got the license, she's on the hook. But if they haven't told her that she needs a license, then surely they're on the hook.
Yeah, that's where the local authority, if they were ever to investigate it, would focus.
Yes.
So ultimately, you can have there's a statutory reasonable excuse defence.
Yes.
So if you can prove that you have a reasonable excuse defence, but not being aware of the law is not a reasonable excuse. That's been held.
No, this isn't what we're doing, though, is it? We're saying I've paid someone to make me aware of the law and they haven't.
Absolutely. And in my experience, I mean, I deal with quite a lot of these cases. It's quite common for the local authority to take action against both the landlord and the managing agent.
Wow.
For non-compliance with the licensing scheme. But each case is different. So yes. I can explain the rules, but I haven't investigated the case, so I can't say what the answer is.
Well, no, but you can engage in the hypothetical, because I'm fairly clear, as with Angela Rayner, that if she was told that she should have been seeking better advice or she should have been actually paying for the license and she chose not to, then she's in trouble. But if, as I've just read out, if the contract she signed involved a requirement on the part of the agent to provide compliance, legal compliance, health and safety, supervision and arrangement and renewal of all legislative and safety checks. If that is all true, hypothetically, then do you think she has a case to answer?
I suppose it partly depends on what was the duration of the breach. How long did this go on before she realised? How did she find out
about it? About a year. And she found out about it when the Daily Mail, who, for reasons that only they could explain to you, have been digging into, presumably, the minutiae of the financial arrangements of every member of the Labour government while paying Boris Johnson hundreds of thousands of pounds a year to write a column, despite, of course, having behaved so appallingly that two ethics advisers resigned. They phoned her up on the other night and told her people. And I presume that's the first she had heard of the need for this property in this area to have the licence that you describe that she needs.
Quite possibly. And I think what it demonstrates to some extent is the massive complexity of property licensing rules across the country.
Yeah.
So in her favour, there are many thousands of landlords probably in a similar situation, not aware that they need to have the relevant licence.
Many thousands? Gosh.
Well, I would think so. I deal with quite a few.
No, you clearly do.
But that'll only be touching the surface.
It was interesting, wasn't it, the first caller in exactly the same borough having exactly the same problem and therefore being guilty of exactly the same quotes, offence, end quotes, whereas, I mean, I didn't feel that she was actually guilty of anything. But the property owner, Steve in Manchester, has got 8 properties who just wouldn't trust an agent with this. I don't want to tempt you into unsafe territory, professionally speaking, Richard, because you're clearly absolutely on top of this particular game. But how common would it be for an agent not to know or not to be telling their landlord that they need this kind of license, given the complications you've just described?
I suppose partly depends on, is it a reputable agent?
Yes.
Agents come in lots of different shapes and sizes. Sometimes I've come across cases where it's been almost an administrative error within the agency. They've got hundreds of licensable properties.
Right.
But for whatever set of circumstances, this one was missed. And there's not a license for a particular property. And as soon as it's realised, they get the application in. But most agents will be aware of licensing rules in their local area, or certainly should be.
Well, you'd hope so. And yet Sue, who opened the bidding this morning, was unfortunate enough to have employed one or engaged one that initially, at least, didn't know it. So in the absence of further detail and working entirely on the presumption that the facts are as she has presented them, and indeed as the Daily Mail has presented them, she'll probably be okay?
So in my experience, if the landlord has acted before the local authorities come chasing them,
yes,
that generally the local authority don't go back to try and...
So the Daily Mail have dropped a clanger. The Daily Mail shouldn't have phoned her. They should have phoned council.
Well, they could have done, and Southwark Council could have sent an officer around to investigate and see if it was operating as a licensable but unlicensed property.
There's
one other element to it that might be of interest.
Yes.
So obviously, from the local authority's point of view, within 6 months of the offence, so I don't know when this was resolved, they can issue what's called a civil financial penalty of up to £30,000. But there's another element to it as well, is that the tenants that were living in the property, within 12 months, can claim back up to 12 months' rent through what's called a rent repayment order.
I'm going to keep a very close eye on the budget, Richard, to see if that loophole gets closed next month.
and interestingly, through the Renters' Rights Act that came in the other day,
yes,
that, that maximum amount of rent that can be recovered for a licensable but unlicensed property is going up from 1 year to 2 years.
Fantastic. That's something else that our regular correspondent, another Richard, who feels that we don't give the Labour government enough credit for the stuff that it's brought in. I'm sure he's all over the renters' rights bill. So she's unlikely to be hoisted by that particular petard, but there would be an irony to it if indeed she was. Richard, that's brilliant. That's absolutely, thank you. I'm so glad you were listening today. Can I just reassure you though, you don't have to be this qualified to ring in the future. You can ring in on stuff where the ground beneath your feet is slightly less firm than it was today, because it's a pleasure to talk to you.
No problem at all. And for your listeners, James, if anyone's, because I'm seeing quite an increase in hits for my free website today on licensing schemes in London, would you be happy for me to give the name of it if anyone wants to look at it?
I absolutely would, yes.
Okay, so it's quite an easy one. It's the London Property Licensing website.
Good man, there you go. Is this Ray Liotta territory? Is this Ray Liotta territory? So if Rachel Reeves had gone to the London Property Licensing website, she would not be in the trouble that she's in today.
Exactly. I could have submitted the application for her if she wanted me to.
Well, that bit's not free.
She would have read about all the rules.
That bit's not free, Richard, is it?
That's not free. The information on the website is, and she would have seen that in her area she needs a license.
And if I'm paying 15% to my letting agent, I'd actually expect them to be doing that themselves. But I'm going to give you a Ray Liotta, because they can't. I presume you're the only one, or at least there won't be many. Here you go, mate.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
That's a spy. That's it now. It's peaked. That's your debut call, and you got the highest honour that the programme can bestow. I was not expecting to be dishing out any of them on this particular subject, but we came pretty close with Sue, but I think Richard just nudged over the bar. It's 10:45.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m.
If you're in a position where another £1,000 to find is the difference between you going on holiday and you not going on holiday, I do actually think, for a week, the one family holiday you get to take that year is actually a good reason for you to miss school with your child.
Tom Swarbrick.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.5% AER variable. That includes a 2% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that once-in-a-lifetime adventure. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents. Available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.41% gross. Terms apply.
At Lathwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low. And we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track, we certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at Lathwaites.co.uk. Lathwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Hi, I'm Piers Morgan. It's official. Woke is dead and I've written the obituary. Cancel celebs are emerging from social media jail and virtue signalling is punishable by ridicule. So what caused this shift? How did the silenced majority win? And what's next? In my new book, Woke is Dead, I explore the fall of woke culture and the return to a world of common sense over cancellation, seeking unity over division. You'll be shocked by how much you agree with me. Woke is Dead is out now.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero-emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:48 is the time. I mean, I know it can be a bit of a stuck record sometimes, but you're used to it by now. Double standards. Very sadly, and I hate this because it's one area where you'd really, really hope against hope that the usual suspects didn't try and make it all about themselves or turn it into an opportunity to score political points. But five survivors on the victims panel during the grooming gang inquiry have called for an apology from a certain politician. I don't know whether you would have heard about this yet. If it was Jess Phillips that they were demanding an apology from, then it would have been all over your radio, I think, at certain times of day, your newspapers, all the rest of it. But the details of this particular development are truly hideous, including a politician who wants to sit down with survivors of hideous grooming experiences and sexual abuse, and he wants them to tell him the details of what they went through. Not the inquiry, not the experts charged with conducting these investigations, if they ever find somebody who is prepared to endure the slings and arrows of political opportunism and actually head up the whole thing. But I read that twice this morning, because even by the standards of this hideous human being, I could not believe my eyes. You want what? You think you have the right to demand that they sit down with you and disclose the full details of precisely what happened to them at the hands of their abusers? Do you know, I don't think it is appropriate of me to actually use that as a hook and tease, or to conclude that little bit of the programme by saying, can you guess who it is? I think that would be very, very wrong of me. So I'll tell you who it is. It's 30p Lee. It's Lee Anderson. Who, and I'll quote this, we need a proper grown-up adult conversation with these women, I'm not quoting now, but this is in the nature of the question, about the nature of their abuse. The Reform UK MP, Lee Anderson, said the party would need a proper grown-up adult conversation with the women about the nature of their abuse. This followed Nigel Farage effectively accusing them of not having been abused in the right way to have their cases included in the grooming gang inquiry. They were abused by Asian men, according to their own testimony and their own accounts, and they were aware that the inquiry is not just about them, but some of the group they were abused by. Some of the group were also abused by men from other ethnic backgrounds, and that appears to be the grounds on which Farage has said that they have not been or that they should not be listened to or taken seriously enough. He actually said these words: here's the truth about the other five. There are two very distinctly different groups of young people who are sexually abused and raped by adults, and what has happened with this inquiry is the government have quite deliberately from the very start widened the scope out from those who were victims of Pakistani grooming gangs and brought in other women. They have accused Farage of humiliating and degrading remarks on abuse. If your abuse had been covered up, would you really care? I mean, if you were really in the business of protecting victims of both abuse and cover-up, on what possible planet would you say to some of those victims, oh, no, we don't mean you. We don't mean you. And I'll run through this because I think it's important. They added, there is no point holding an inquiry if the scope is so small the decision is already made before it begins. Two of this group have written memoirs about their experiences of predominantly Asian grooming gangs. I don't know, not Asian enough for Nigel, using the pseudonyms Scarlett Jones and Caitlin Spencer. You can look them up yourselves. Two more survivors, using the pseudonyms Claire and Katie, said they felt unable to share details of their abuse through fear of their safety, but insisted they were victims of traditional grooming gangs. I'll say that again. They said that they were too fearful for their safety to share details of their abuse publicly. But Lee Anderson, the Reform UK MP, thinks that they should sit down with him and tell them. We need a proper grown-up adult conversation, something that Lee Anderson is obviously incapable of by dint of not being a proper grown-up adult. But nonetheless, he has been told, or these, perhaps he hasn't bothered to read the submissions, that these women don't want to discuss the full details in public. That's why the grooming gang inquiry is there. But he thinks they should sit down with him, adding, with regards to what Nigel has said, that's up to Nigel. We will speak to him later about that. So the headline here that you probably haven't come across today, because I've only seen it reported in The Guardian, is that grooming victims accuse Farage of humiliating and degrading remarks on abuse. And this is tricky, because I suggested to you last week that some of the women who have come out of this inquiry, who have expressed dissatisfaction with Jess Phillips, may have been influenced by politicians. And I don't want to go any further than that, because then you run the risk of sounding like you're denigrating them. But I worry that victims of grooming may have been influenced by politicians. And at the press conference where Farage made these hideous comments, he was joined on the stage by one of the women who had resigned from the inquiry last week. I don't know how you introduce a hierarchy of horror into crimes like this, but Farage and Lee Anderson have managed to. And you won't be hearing about it anytime soon on some radio programs, television programs, or indeed in some newspapers. Make of that what you will. Back to Rachel Reeves, who is arguably also a victim of epic media double standards, because she has referred herself to the Independent Ethics Advisor, precisely the same office that a prominent Daily Mail columnist behaved so badly that two residents of it resigned in disgust. But it's the Daily Mail who are treating her as if she's committed the mother of all sins by not knowing that she needed a license to rent out her home. Ashley is in Lisbon. Ashley, what would you like to say?
Hi, good morning. I'm not sure how I can follow on from your previous call there. I don't think I have the same expertise.
He knew his stuff, didn't he? But don't worry, yeah. We can be the people who know less, Ashley. In fact, you'll probably know more than me, so you're in second place already.
Oh, very good. No, I'm a selective licence holder in Durham County Council.
Okay.
And I just, my point is, the Chancellor's Exchequer and the government are bringing in more and more regulations on landlords. We've got AWAB's law, we've got the Renters' Rights Bill. Landlords are expected to meet a higher and higher level of standards to rent in this market. And the Chancellor of the Exchequer is one of the senior members of government and should be setting a standard. It's irrelevant.
I see that. But she's paid someone to do that for her.
I have a lettings agent that manages all my properties, but right through the contract, it says the landlord needs to make sure that they fulfil all their legislative requirements. And exactly the same if you compare it to
yeah,
driving.
But the contract also says that I'm paying you to tell me what the legislative requirements are. So that this is where we opened. She's in a lot of trouble if they've said to her, you need a licence, and she didn't get one. But if they haven't said to her, you need a licence, despite the fact that she is paying them to ensure compliance across all of these matters, then I don't see how anyone can hold her responsible for it. Politically, you hope that she is going to learn a little lesson about how complicated it is to be a landlord these days, and that in real life things are off a little bit different to how they look in the crucible of policy formation. But she's paying people to do what you describe, and if they haven't done it, they're in breach of contract.
Yeah, I think what the previous caller said as well is that both the lettings agent and the landlord will be liable. So you can take all the advice you want from your lettings agent, but I'd like to make sure that I'm covering all my boxes as well. Rather than taking the advice of somebody else.
Then why are you paying them?
Legal matters. I'm paying them to run the administrative duties because I can't do it.
Yeah, but that's it. So why are you paying them to do something that you're then going to do yourself?
They're doing the daily work. They're taking the phone calls. They're dealing with the maintenance issues. They're dealing with the large graft. And that's really all I want from them.
But you've got multiple properties. She is paying them to deal with compliance, to deal with health and safety, and to deal with all the legislative requirements.
But if she can't meet the competencies of being a landlord, then I suspect that she shouldn't be a landlord.
Well, we're slightly at odds here. I mean, I don't dismiss your point, but if I was renting out a property and I was paying someone up to 15% of the income to provide fully managed service, say, and we don't know the full details of this, and of course this remains to be clarified, and I was paying for, quotes, clarity on legal compliance and health and safety matters, and, quotes, arrangement and renewal of all legislative and safety checks, Your argument doesn't really hold up. That's literally, it's a bit like saying, I'm going shopping to buy some food, but I'm also going to buy some more food in case the food that I've paid for isn't proper food.
If you look at it in another sense, if we're on,
I'm going to go out and buy some apples, but then I'm going to go home and grow my own apples in case I can't trust the apples that I've just paid someone to provide me with.
Or your driving instructor tells you what the rules of the road are, but then you follow what the driving instructor says, and you get pulled over by the police. Are the police going to accept what you've said because a person of powers told you what to do?
So the driving instructor has deliberately... Well, if you've got it on tape that the driving instructor is saying, go and drive into that bollard, it's a requirement of this driving lesson, then you'd probably have a case. But your analogy's nowhere near as good as my apples.
But you probably use your head and think, I'm not going to drive into that bollard, I'm going to go do my research myself.
That's a point. No one does that if you're paying someone 15% of the income on the rent to do the renting. Just don't be daft.
Here's
some money to do a job. Oh, I'm going to do it myself as well. No one does that, Ashley. No one does that. I do it.
That's the point of this call.
Well, then you're a mug. Why don't you pay me for something as well and then do it yourself and I'll pretend I did it?
I just like to have responsibility of my own.
Of course
you do. That I'm legally right. But,
yeah, while paying someone else to do it as well. Why do you pay them if you're doing it all yourself? Why don't you just back yourself to do it?
Double tick the boxes, but the government...
But you can do that as well. You can tick the boxes. Why are you paying them to tick the boxes when you can tick the boxes yourself?
Could, yeah.
Well, why don't you? I'm curious now. Why don't you?
Because I want to be a professional landlord.
But you would be. You'd be doing it yourself. But why are you paying someone else to do the things that you're also doing?
Because that's just one thing that they offer, but I don't need that service. Some people maybe do, and maybe they rely on that. And if
but the things you're paying them to do, the things you're paying them to do that you do yourself, why are you paying them to do it?
I don't think you can remove it from the contract and pay them less.
Well, you don't need to have a contract with them if you're doing everything yourself. You can deal directly with the tenants.
I can't, there's a lot of things I can't do. I don't know, like you...
Well, anyway,
I don't know the tenants.
What do you want to pay me to do that you're going to do yourself? Because I'm up for it.
I pay you to listen to the radio every day to provide me with all my news.
Well, it doesn't quite work, does it, as an analogy, because I'm going to be doing that anyway, whether you pay me. And actually, you don't pay me. You get it for free. So I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll provide you with a bespoke service, all right? I want 100 quid a week, and I will email you with a little digest of all the news, except I won't, because I'll get you to do it yourself. But you still have to give.
But you still have to give me
100 quid a week.
Anyway, you'd be paying £100 a week.
You're going to do it. You're going to pay me £100 a week to do it. But then, because you want to be a professional receiver of news, you're also going to do it yourself while paying me £100 a week to do it. So you send me the email and the 100 quid, and I'll send it back to you, and we're golden, right? Because that's what you're doing with your letting agent at the moment.
Yeah, I understand. I understand your analogy, but
it's 11:01
on your radio. On the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Kemi Badenoch has told LBC Rachel Reeves should resign if she has committed an offence. The Chancellor's admitted she failed to obtain the required selective rental licence to let her home in London. The Conservatives say Miss Reeves must face an investigation. But Policing and Crime Minister Sarah Jones told Nick Ferrari on LBC that's not necessary.
She didn't know that there was selective licensing.
She's the Chancellor.
Minute she did, she rectified it, she's put it right. The Prime Minister has gone to his ethics advisor and said, what do I do about this? The ethics advisor has said she's apologised, she put it right. As soon as she knew, she did. There's no more to be done.
Kemi Badenoch has also called for the Chancellor to be sacked if she increases taxes at next month's budget. The Tory leader will be taking your calls on LBC with Ian Dale this evening from 7. An Afghan national has been remanded into custody, accused over a triple stabbing in West London. Safi Darwood is charged with the murder of Wayne Broadhurst and the attempted murder of two other people in Uxbridge on Monday. The 22-year-old has appeared at Westminster Magistrates Court. One of the UK's leading online pharmacies has been criticised for selling a weight loss jab to a severely anorexic woman. LBC has learned the patient used an AI-generated image to bypass Newman's checks to buy Wegovy. Tom Quinn is from the eating disorder charity Beat.
We need much tighter regulation in place to ensure that no one with anorexia or any other eating disorder, or indeed any serious mental illness, is able to access access these drugs without a thorough mental health assessment having taken place.
Newman has apologised directly to the woman's family and says it'll bring in extra verification tools to avoid a repeat. The Red Cross has called Hurricane Melissa a disaster of unprecedented catastrophe. More than 30 people are now known to have died in several Caribbean countries. And figures show nearly 40,000 prisoners in England and Wales have been let out of jail under the government's early release scheme. It was introduced in September last year to help ease overcrowding in prisons. Eligible inmates can be released after serving 40% of their sentence. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 46 points at 97.09. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather becoming more cloudy and windy this afternoon with showers moving in from the west, largely dry with bright spells in the southeast, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Simon Conway.
In 2024, a hangry fan posted, "Why do other countries have better McDonald's menus than ours?" So, we went abroad and heisted some worldwide favourites. The World Menu Heist. 9 of the most wanted McDonald's menu items from around the world. Now in the UK. Until 25th of November, from 11 a.m, fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 11. We could have summed up the entire last hour of the radio with the old line about not buying a dog and then barking yourself. Yeah, you don't buy a dog if you're going to bark yourself, which I suspect will be the beginning, the middle and the end of the Rachel Reeves story, unless further details emerge. But remember, because this is actually important if you care about the organs that you rely upon for information, that you either care about ethics and integrity, in which case you would want Boris Johnson banished to Siberia, or you don't, in which case you would sign him up to write a column in your newspaper. And it is precisely that newspaper that has set the dogs on Rachel Reeves this morning. And listen, people often ask me questions about what other people in my line of work know. And I don't know. I don't know whether people are being deliberately ignorant, deliberately obtuse, or whether they just don't actually care enough about the facts to check the details of a story when they've got a scarf to knot around their neck and a football chant to shout from the terraces. 5 minutes after 11 is the time. I've got two ways into the next conversation. The situation in Jamaica is pretty hideous, as you will by now be well aware. And it speaks to, as you would expect, the broader questions of climate change. Millions of people dying each year from combined effects of failure to tackle climate crisis. These are statistics that do not reach many people's consciences, let alone their consciousness. Rising global heat. This is a major report on the health impact of the climate crisis that finds one person a minute dying as a consequence. Rising global heat is now killing one person a minute around the world. It's the toxic air pollution, the wildfires, the spread of diseases, which spread more quickly the warmer it is, things like dengue fever. Millions now dying each year. And the most comprehensive report to date reminds us things are about to get a lot worse with people like Donald Trump ripping up climate policies and oil companies continuing to exploit new reserves. It comes from the University College of London, and the lead researcher, Dr. Marina Romanello, said it paints a bleak and undeniable picture of the devastating health harms reaching all corners of the world. The destruction to lives and livelihoods will continue to escalate until we end our fossil fuel addiction, most of which, if not all of which, we have heard before. The Secretary General of the United Nations also warned this week that humanity has failed to limit global heating to 1.5 degrees centigrade and must change course immediately. COP30 next month, and Antonio Guterres has only given one interview in which he acknowledged it is inevitable that humanity will overshoot the target in the Paris Climate Agreement and that the consequences will be devastating for the world. Urging leaders who will gather in the Brazilian rainforest city of Belém, and just to save me from the half a dozen people who think it would be really clever to contact me to point this out, yes, they'll probably be flying there. It seems unlikely that they'd go by pogo stick, so well done, carry on. the greater danger of passing catastrophic tipping points in the Amazon, the Arctic, and the oceans, coming into ever sharper focus. Let us recognize our failure, he said. It is a failure. And the tipping points will be in places like the Amazon, Greenland, Western Antarctica, or the coral reefs. And then we come to Jamaica, where Hurricane Melissa has already started exacting a human toll as a consequence of what climate scientists agree is a tragedy, a horror fueled by the warming of oceans, fueled by precisely the same phenomena that are referenced in the other two stories, the story about the target being mixed and the mist, and the story about people dying each year as a consequence of these combined effects. And I mean, part of me wants to know what do you know, actually? I know you may not believe me. Well, actually, you will believe me. The people I'm talking to will believe me. I want to know how your family are back in Jamaica. There was a brilliant piece on one of the news programs last night where a chap finally got through to his mum, and I felt for him because it was a bit like being on the radio when you've got a bad line. But of course he had a bad line. He was ringing from this country and he got hold of his mum, and you know that he said he could tell from the little bit of her voice that he heard. He said, "Oh, I've woken you up." But obviously he pressed on anyway, because that was a slightly less important factor than making sure or finding out what sort of state the house was in. I wonder how, I do want to know what's going on the island, and there are a few places in the world where more people will have a connection in this country with that part of the world. Smashed effectively by this Category 5 storms, one of the most powerful hurricanes ever measured in the region. At least 5 people confirmed dead, at least another 20 died as a consequence of flooding in Haiti, where it's a Category 2 storm and has torn through the region. People in Jamaica stranded on roofs and without power. You may have struggled, of course, to get hold of them. 80 to 90% of roofs have been destroyed, along with hospitals, libraries, police stations, port houses, and other urban infrastructure. Do you know who the head of state is in Jamaica? You probably do, but it's always amusing to remember. King Charles is the head of state in Jamaica. He's expressed deep concern and profound sadness about the damage being caused by Hurricane Melissa across the Caribbean, but in Jamaica particularly. And he has said that this storm reminds us of the increasingly urgent need to restore the balance and harmony of nature for the sake of all those whose lives and livelihoods may have been shattered by this heartbreaking disaster. Seems to be the only thing upon which all 3 senior members, male members of the royal family, can agree, or at least which King Charles and both of his sons can agree on. I got a little story for you about one of his sons a little later in the programme. It's an extraordinary missed information. In fact, it's a moment to tell you who the guest that I've got coming in later is. I don't know how successful my attempts to build up tension have been, because Andrew Marr announced it last night. But Steve Coogan is coming in to talk about this court settlement with a man depicted in the film that he made about the discovery of the body of Richard III. Always a pleasure to sit in the presence of Steve Coogan, and today will be no exception. But I just want you to understand something. It's really important. It might be obvious, but I don't know what you do for a living. There's probably stuff that you think is obvious that would be a surprise to me. Like Richard talking to us about property licenses, actually knowing what he's talking about and telling us some stuff that was quite surprising, which is why he got a Ray Liotta. The people in this country who have been loudest in pursuit of the culprits in the phone hacking scandals are treated very, very differently from everybody else. So most obviously, you would look at Prince Harry, Hugh Grant, and Steve Coogan. For reasons I don't fully understand, Elton John gets a kind of free pass on this. I think it's because he's achieved a level of national treasureness that is akin only to the late Queen Mother, or somebody like that, or the Duke of Edinburgh. They're just, you know, and of course, Candle in the Wind at Diana's memorial service. Even these ghouls and horrors won't go after Elton John. So they'll go after a military hero member of the royal family, somebody who is all of the things that they claim to care most about. But they won't go after Elton John, who is also at the forefront of attempts to, continuing attempts to bring the people responsible for the most hideous media scandal of our time to justice. So that is why those three men in particular have their every dot and comma reported as if it were some sort of epic and incredible scandal. They make the treatment of Rachel Reeves look positively mild. And don't let me not tell you about the Prince Harry story before Steve joins us at about 12:45 today, a nice little run-up to Mystery Hour. And media is going to be part of the answer to the next question, isn't it? But I still don't get it. And I know it really boils your blood sometimes that I put myself on the hook for this. Is that I've got a feeling now that there is nothing that could happen that would change the course of humanity. I hate to say this, but I say it from a position of pessimism and a position of very, 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 very mild culpability. I'm not going to go all Catholic guilt on you, but I'm part of the problem, not part of the solution. And who can honestly claim to be part of the solution? Do you know how they reported the trial of some of the people accused of defacing Stonehenge? Did you see that story? I almost did it as a missing word round, but then I realised I'd be sort of joining in with the narrative. So the people accused of defacing Stonehenge, you remember that story, they covered it in paint or powder or something, easily removed, I think, but nonetheless, disruptive. And it was reported that he'd driven to Stonehenge in his grandmother's petrol car. That was the story. That was the headline. You can't trust these people. So arguably the only people on the planet, and I'm not one of them, sorry, he's joining us at 11:45, not 12:45, the only people on the planet that might be able to say, I am not part of the problem, I'm part of the solution, are open to accusations of hypocrisy. Oh my God, they flew to the COP summit, or oh my goodness, he drove to Stonehenge. And the rest of us are either dedicated to pretending that it's not true, lying about it, or not doing anything. And I just want to talk about psychology today. I hope this, I don't know if it will work as a double bubble. Because if you've managed to get hold of someone in Jamaica, what can you tell us about what's going on? Let's get that up and running first, all right? If you've managed to get hold of a family member in Jamaica, what did they tell you? Paint me a picture on 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. If you could do that for me, the simple question really is about what you have learned that I don't know about what has gone on in Jamaica as a consequence of Hurricane Melissa. But for the rest of us, I want to talk about psychology again. I've not come at it from precisely this angle before, but it is, in many ways, the single most fascinating aspect of the unfolding story. I want you to tell me why you think we don't care enough. So even if you've got loved ones in Jamaica at the moment facing unimaginable disruption and horror and possibly even death, you're not going to join Just Stop Oil tomorrow, or join Extinction Rebellion tomorrow. You're not going to. I'm not going to. And it's maybe not fair to put so much weight on them for it. But why? Psychologically, why? You watch the floods in Spain. You watch the floods even in this country. You watch events the like of which we've never seen before. You have an almost unanimous scientific consensus on what the cause of it is. I've always thought that the denial, the kind of Trumpian, Farage-y denial of environmental impact is very easily tested. You just stick them in a closed garage where the car is running and ask them whether they feel better or worse after 5 minutes than they did before. And now imagine doing that to the whole planet. It's a little bit naive scientifically, I grant you, and it may not stand up to peer review, but you'd need a control as well. But generally speaking, go and sit in a room where engines are running, particularly if they're being run on fossil fuels. Close all the doors and windows. Don't get yourself into serious medical difficulty, but just have a little think about whether or not on a planetary level the effects might be at least similar or speaking to the same phenomenon. Phew, and they say, oh, it's not man-made. Well, what is it then? Car-made?
petrol made? Oh, it's not man made. We had an ice age once. Was that my fault? Was that because of deodorants? Why? Don't hold back on this. Don't think, you know, it's obvious, because I don't think it is obvious. There's that brilliant film that I think of every single time we see events like the events that we're seeing in Jamaica at the moment, where there is a meteor heading towards Earth as a metaphor, a meteor, as I don't know anyone has ever called it before. A meteor is heading to Earth. Scientists have spotted it with plenty of time to do something about it, to minimize its impact on Earth. And they desperately try to persuade the population via the media, which is, you know, immediately skeptical in some cases, because it would cost a lot of money to do whatever it is that needs to be done to stop the meteor four from hitting planet Earth. And somehow the public end up not caring. They are all persuaded not to look up. The film is called Don't Look Up. And it's a bit like what Jamaica is today. The meteor four is Jamaica. You can look at Jamaica and you can see that that is what our future holds. But somehow we don't look up. And even if we know it's there, we can somehow live our lives as if it isn't. It's the psychology that is absolutely fascinating. And listen, I don't end up believing political liars, but part of me wishes I could. Imagine how nice it must be to think that Donald Trump is right and you don't actually have anything to worry about and drill, baby, drill. Because then you can just think, oh, that's fine. But the people who do it, the people making all the money, they know that it's true. Just like the tobacco industry knew exactly what they were doing to people. Just like the social media companies who don't let their own children, the social media honchos who don't let their own children have devices, even as they're flogging them to your children, know exactly what they're doing. Tobacco, social media, there's a long list of things that we only latterly discovered were doing us enormous damage, and then we discovered that the people selling them knew all along. So their psychology fascinates me. You love money more than you love your unborn, no, possibly even born. You love money more than you love your grandchildren? Or you manage to believe something that's not true? Donald Trump's quite a good example, isn't he? He offers you something, but I don't know that racism goes hand in hand with climate change denial, does it? Although it probably speaks to a lack of humanity, doesn't it? If you're racist, you don't actually care about humans in the same way that somebody who isn't racist does. You pretend to care about some humans, but really your position is motivated by hatred of other ones. And therefore, planetary crisis. No, because you'd still love someone, wouldn't you? So how does the psychology of it work? 0345-6060-973 is the number that you need, okay? The psychology of why nothing ever changes. No matter what the crisis is, nothing ever really changes. And indeed, probably today, the direction of traffic on climate change is worse than it was 5 years ago, certainly 20 years ago. 0345-6060-973. So, I want to know what's going on in Jamaica with your family, your loved ones, but I really do want to know why, for those of us who aren't narcissists or actually making a ton of money out of climate change, out of fossil fuels, why, do you know what I'm asking you? I'm asking why you don't care more, why don't we care enough? What is going on inside our little heads that allows us to not look up? Complacency? Comfort? What is it? You tell me on 0345-6060-973.
LBC. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m.
If you're in a position where another £1,000 to find is the difference between you going on holiday and you not going on holiday, I do actually think, for a week, the one family holiday you get to take that year is actually a good reason for you to miss school with your child.
Tom Swarbrick.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
LBC.
Why crawl when you can glide? Why stall when you can be dynamic, agile, like a dolphin? The BYD Dolphin Surf is the compact car for the city. Register by 31st of December and this super smart hatchback can be yours for just £199 a month with £199 deposit and 0% APR. Visit BYD.com. T's and C's apply. Finance provided by Santander Consumer Finance. 49-month agreement. Optional final payment £6,771.38.
Tax is changing from April 2026.
If you're a sole trader or a landlord
with a turnover above £50,000,
you'll need to use recognised software to keep records
and send quarterly updates of your income and expenses.
There's no avoiding it. Tax is changing. Get ready. Search HMRC Making Tax Digital.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345
6060973. What are the other sort of... There aren't really any historical parallels, are there? Where we faced planetary threat and we've just looked the other way. But there's probably population-based parallels. You know, where a single society has faced an epic threat and then just persuaded itself that it wasn't facing any trouble at all. Off the top of my head, I can't really think of any. I bet you can. A sort of historical precedent on a smaller population level. So a town or a country or a part of the world facing an existential threat and somehow persuading itself that everything was fine. Maybe it's a survival technique. We'd never get out of bed. If we fully acknowledged and felt the scale of the climate crisis, we'd never actually do anything. Would we? Because as it stands, we can watch Jamaica, a part of the world which couldn't have tighter connections with this country, facing utter devastation. And we know that it will not make a dent in our collective attitude to climate change. And I genuinely don't understand why. Gary's in Walthamstow. Gary, what do you think?
I don't think, James.
That's the spirit, mate. Think. That's the spirit. Vote Nigel.
Oh, no. James, the thing is, it's a little bit like, you know, someone telling you to give up smoking and it's because it's possibly going to cause you cancer. Most people don't believe that it's actually going to happen. Yeah. And unfortunately, I think with climate change, you know, if you think about when you're in your 20s, well, if someone was saying to you, James, you really need to put some money away for your retirement, you just... It's not as acute to you in your 20s as it is in your 40s and 50s.
Tell me about it.
I think just generally as human beings, I was thinking about this the other day.
Hang on a minute. Oi, you said you didn't think. How dare you come on this program and misrepresent yourself so egregiously?
James, I overthink everything. That's why I think I get upset about. Yeah, I think that's why I get so upset. I mean, I've got family in Grenada, right, and they've been watching acutely at what's going on as to whether, you know, the storm might move in their direction. Hopefully, it's not going to. Sure. Cause obviously, they've suffered devastation. I mean, for instance, the nutmeg market in Grenada completely devastated by a barrel past hurricane.
Wow! Yeah,
just completely wiped it out. But Western nations don't have the problem, do they? Until London or New York floods severely, no one's going to take it seriously because it just doesn't, you know, they believe A, we have the technology, B, we have the finance, and C, we have the resources to deal with it, and it's never going to really affect us. And those outlying countries that have problems, well, you know, they're just a bunch of reference.
I don't know that that's true, because how do you think Jamaica will change? I don't know that even, is San Francisco ready for another earthquake? Do the bits of society that are actually directly affected change massively in the aftermath of an impact that compared to what they were like before? I'm not even sure they do, mate.
But it's not even the society, is it? It's the system. It's the system that govern us that needs to change. And the system that govern us is a very few amount of people who don't believe that it'll affect them
not true. Sorry to be pedantic, but until relatively recently, that there was consensus on this stuff among political leaders. David Cameron, Boris Johnson, they were pretty clear on what the science was telling us, on the reality. Granted, things have gone into reverse now, but there was. I mean, the Paris Agreement was a consequence of political consensus, and if the kind of people that signed it had somehow stayed in power, or people like them had stayed in power, we might have reached it. So there was there was people in power who understood the problem. I mean, the house wasn't likely to be washed away tomorrow, but they still were on board, unless it was just lip service for votes, of course, which is possible.
I think it was a bit of lip service, and equally, I also think that it was a case that, you know what, we'll sign up to this, but we won't fully commit to it anyway. But we'll demonstrate to the public that we are thinking about it and we're going to do something about it. But deep down, it's like, you know, ending poverty. We could end poverty tomorrow on a global scale.
Yeah.
There's enough food to feed every single person on this planet four times over. But the system that's in place chooses not to. It's as simple as that. And most people don't care. I mean, I worked in an office where someone said, why don't they just bomb the boats?
Yeah.
And I said, well, you're happy to kill people. Well, it's not me. And that was that person's real, you know, attitude towards it. You could have a Holocaust tomorrow. If you said to people, we've solved the channel problem and they were being exterminated, there's a lot of people in this country that wouldn't care.
Because it's someone else that's suffering, it's someone else that's dying. So the idea of objective morality is just naive.
Because it's never going to be them. That's the way they look at it. It's like the Trump supporters. It was never going to be me that they were going to be deporting. It's always going to be my neighbour until they came for them.
Well, I think you've nailed part of the problem, but you haven't nailed us. Why aren't we doing more? You and me.
Man, I know, James, do you know what?
Because that's the bigger question, mate. It's easy to go after the usual suspects and give them a coating in all the usual ways, but why aren't the people who do appreciate the seriousness?
What can I do directly? You know, I've got limited resources, I've got no influence whatsoever.
Is the idea that recycling your empties is going to make a blindest bit of difference to anything.
Do you know what? I've stopped doing that ever since I went down the dump recently and I said, look, where do I put the food waste? And he said, chuck it in the general waste. And I thought, what is the point?
Someone can answer that question if they want to. What is the point? Because there is a point. It's just somewhat hard for people who, as Gary has beautifully described, are too busy getting on with it to actually remember. And it doesn't help, I don't think, that the people who have taken it upon themselves to be the kind of conscience of all of us, the Greta Thunbergs or the Just Stop Oils, the Extinction Rebellions, come in for such an almighty kicking that it would be a logical response to sort of think, oh boy, I'm keeping my head below the parapet. I don't want any of that. Which is why I admire Prince Harry so much, actually. And I've got a little story to tell you about him after the headlines with Simon Conway.
Kemi Badenoch has told LBC Rachel Reeves is not on top of her paperwork and should resign if she's broken the law. The Chancellor has admitted she failed to obtain the correct rental licence to let her family home in London. An Afghan migrant has appeared in court charged with murdering a stranger in a triple stabbing in West London. Safi Dawood, who's 22, is accused of killing Wayne Broadhurst as well as two attempted murders in Uxbridge on Monday. One of the UK's largest online pharmacies has promised to bring in stronger verification checks. LBC has learned a severely anorexic woman was able to buy a weight loss jab from Newman by using an AI-generated image. LBC weather becoming more cloudy and windy this afternoon with showers moving into the west, largely dry with bright spells in the southeast, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC.
You run a small business restoring and selling second-hand furniture, and business is booming. So much so, you've gone digital and opened up an online store. But now, you're worried about cybersecurity. Viruses, malware, hacks and leaks. How do you protect yourself? Just ask BT.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
This Waitrose Wine Lover Week, find your perfect match with 4 for 3 on Wine and Fizz.
Meet our smooth Argentinian Catena Malbec that can handle the rich flavours of roast beef, or the elegant number one Chablis, effortlessly charming with a cheese board. Perhaps your type is more bubbly, like our Cab de Turckheim Cremant d'Alsace, an unforgettable fling for any canapé. Find your perfect wine pairing at Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores and lines subject to availability exclude Scotland boxed wines and bottles priced £6 or under and £100 or over.
You asked, BT answered.
Having a firewall is essential for any small to medium-sized company. Think of it as a digital bouncer, monitoring and controlling what enters and leaves your network. It'll block anything suspicious trying to get through.
Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity to find out more.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
33 minutes after 11 is the time. Reports, second-hand presumably, although first-hand if possible, if you are listening to this in Jamaica. It's one of the wonderful things about radio, of course, is that it reaches parts that other media cannot reach. It's why video never killed us. Or second-hand, if you're here but you've made contact with loved ones in Jamaica about what the situation is on the ground there as Hurricane Melissa does its worst. And then the bigger picture, which is entirely appropriate to contemplate, is why events like this don't change anything when, you know, everybody qualified knows that they are consequences of man-made climate change, of warming oceans in this case, making explosive storm developments much more common. Janet is in Forest Hill. Janet, what made you pick up the phone?
Morning, James.
Hello, Janet.
So, first-time caller, long-time listener.
Welcome, thank you.
I think what made me pick up the phone is that I was having a conversation with my family last night. They luckily were pretty unscathed compared to the rest of the country because they're in Kingston, the capital.
Okay.
But I'm a retired teacher and my aunt also is a retired teacher, and I was just asking them about just when do you think the children will be able to get back to school?
Yes.
And then she sent a picture through of her old school, Manning School, which is in Westmoreland, which is one of the most devastated areas in Jamaica. And the school was established in 1738, and
wow,
it was completely decimated, completely decimated.
It's just gone,
just
effectively.
Just gone.
Wow.
And it just made me really think when I was listening to your question that often when you think about, you know, when you're not living in the area, and mostly it's the third world that I think are really always affected by climate change so much, and yet we don't really think about it, because you just, when you think of a hurricane, often you just think, oh well, you know, the houses blow down, you build another house, but you don't think of all the history and all the other ways that it affects.
No, you're right. You think about it in the moment. You don't think about what it's destroyed historically, culturally, heritage. But
totally.
But you know. And this is the point I made to Gary. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. Although, on the other hand, as you know, I never do. But the people of Jamaica aren't really going to change their ways after this, are they? They're not. I mean, because that's the other bit of the coin. The other side of the coin is that, well, we're on the receiving end. We're on the front line of the consequences of warming oceans in this case. But there's not an awful lot we can do in Jamaica to cool the oceans down, so we're not going to change the way we behave either. So there's lethargy from both ends.
Yeah, it is. And when you think of it, it's, I remember, just as your other caller was talking about, you're talking about recycling, what can we do? But what we know, so for example, what I think that we could definitely do, but I'll hold my hand up, I'm not prepared to do, is to not take planes, you know, when we're travelling around.
Well, you're never going to get to Jamaica in any other way, are you?
Exactly. and that's the difficulty.
It really is, so, isn't it? And it's not. It's no fun to sort of go, oh, you catch a plane, you don't care. But, you know, it is. I forget who wrote the short story where we all live in weird little pods and we never see anybody except on video screens. But that's the only future. And, you know, that we've all moved underground because we've utterly destroyed the planet. It's either H.G. Wells or possibly E.M. Forster, I forget who. But, I mean, that is the point, isn't it? Is that you'd never see your aunt again if you both decided never to fly again.
Yeah, most definitely.
There's not a lot you can do about it.
No, no. So it, I just thought, I mean, that's why I was ringing in, really.
No, thank you. Thank you. And how did, I mean, you knew that school, did it? You visited it yourself, or?
I've never visited myself, because, I mean, I don't remember going to, no, the school that I did visit was in Kingston, which I think has been there for quite a long time.
Okay.
But this is a school that my aunt went to.
Yeah. And it's gone. And it's gone. And that's not going to get report. I mean, we will read. In fact, I read out earlier. Schools have been destroyed. But I didn't have any sense of the children that went there, the children that studied there, the teachers that were. The school's just gone. Imagine a school near you. There's a school near you. Janet's in Forest Hill. Wherever you are listening now, there's a school near you. It's the nearest school. I've got a school practically over the road from where I live. It's just gone. It's just gone. What happens tomorrow? What caused it? Oh, climate change. What are we going to do about it? Oh, nothing really, because there's no point recycling. And anyway, India's got a oil tanker or something. You know the arguments. You've heard them a million times before. Sheesh. 11:37 is the time. Lance is in St. Ives. Lance, what would you like to say?
Thank you, James, for having me on this morning.
Well, I'm afraid, I'm grateful though I am for your gratitude, this conversation is not going to continue for much longer because your phone is absolutely appalling. And we will try and rectify that imminently. The time is 11:38. You're listening to, it is The Machine Stops by E.M. Forster. I got such an erudite audience, haven't I? That's slightly kind of, it's a slightly bowdlerized version of my half-hearted memories of one of my all-time favorite short stories. It's my second favorite short story of all time. I've never told you what my favorite short story of all time is, and I probably never will, because I'll forget that I've promised to in the space of the next 30 seconds. But The Machine Stops by E.M. Forster, I cannot recommend it enough. It's an absolute masterpiece. And at the moment, my inbox consists chiefly of people sending me messages saying, it's The Machine Stops by E.M. Forster. Which is a lovely indication of the calibre, the literary calibre of people who are listening to this programme at the moment. Let's go back to Lance in St. Ives, whose phone line has hopefully been immeasurably enhanced. Lance, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. Thank you for having me on.
Well, that means it was your fault that the phone was so bad.
Before. Yes, it was.
What did you do? Did you ignore Eleanor when she told you not to put me on speaker? Did you just think, oh, I'm not going to pay any attention to her? You did. Guilty.
I'd like to think that I was that objective about it, but it was just stupid F-wittery, that's all it was.
Never mind. Carry on, Lance. What do you reckon's going on here, psychologically speaking?
Psychologically, it's complex. There are at least 12 sort of, like, cognitive biases that we get involved with, but I want to focus on...
I can't go through all of them. I've got Steve Coogan sitting outside waiting to come on the programme.
Absolutely, I'm not going to. So I'm just going to focus on one or two or three as to why I don't do it. Now, just as very quick bit of background, I used to be a lecturer in nursing, and one of my focuses was sustainability and health and climate change.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I've published on that in nursing journals, trying to get the health service to address sustainability and climate change. That's sort of my academic background.
Gosh.
But your question to your previous caller was, well, knowing all of that, why don't I change?
Yeah.
And that's a really, really challenging question. And I'm still struggling with the real answer, because it's about my own moral agency within systems. Now, I'm not going to talk about systems, because I'll bore you, and there's a lot of work on why systems impinge on moral agency. But for me, it is a degree of what we call a collective action problem. It's not in my immediate rational interest to change a great deal, because there's a feeling that, well, if I do this, if I really do, if I get rid of the car, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera,
yeah.
Nobody else is, why bother?
Yes.
And that's a hard, even though I know that's true, and I can see it as a collective action problem, I still don't do everything that I think I could be doing, for example, as everybody says, stop flying, because I feel, what's the point? And that then brings it down to the next level of the collective action problem, which is cognitive loading. I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Daniel Kahneman.
I don't think I am.
Fast and Slow.
Called what? What was it called?
Thinking Fast and Slow.
That rings a bell.
Thinking Fast and Yeah, it's quite a bestseller. It's Kahneman worked on cognitive biases and how our brains actually work. And the theory is that our conscious mind has only got so much processing power to deal with issues.
That's where I am. I didn't know there was a name for it.
Yeah.
But there is that sort of sense, I know it, sort of, I know it.
Yeah.
It matters, but good Lord, I've got bills to pay.
Exactly. Exactly. You get up in the morning, you've got breakfast to prepare, you've got to think about your commute, is your shirt ironed, are the kids crying, etc.
Yes, exactly. You've seen me. So, I haven't ironed a shirt since 1984.
We kind of like then find it hard to bring it into our the area of moral agency.
Could we be helped? I mean, I don't like to blame the media for everything, even though they are to blame for almost everything bad in this world. But the if they're not to blame for it, they've made it worse. But if we were having more responsible conversation, could it be helped? Could the cognitive load be moved slightly?
You've heard of nudge theory.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So
it's the little things,
system.
Cumulative little things. Not a whopping great sledgehammer, but a million scalpels.
A million. Make the right decision the easy decision.
Oh, write that down.
That's the theory.
No, hey, do you want to know a little coincidence? I mean, admittedly, we've got quite a lot of listeners these days, but nevertheless, that book you mentioned, Daniel's just texted to say, no way, I'm reading that right now.
Good man.
Unless he's reading the E.M. Forster short story, of course, which I was referencing just a moment ago. Lance, thank you for that. Stay safe. Last word, I think, on this. Pav is in Maidenhead. Pav, what would you like to say?
So I've got a few things to say, but the first thing is, you know when you mentioned about populations and coming up against something that might...
Have you got one?
Yeah.
Go on.
The British, the Indians and, you know, Clive of India, I've been listening to a few podcasts recently, and obviously where the reason why, you know, the East India Company was able to do what it did was because a lot of Indians actually turned onto the other side, despite the obvious risk that would happen.
Is that the same as... I mean, the ones that did turn onto the other side were generally okay, weren't they? While Clive of India did his worst? I mean, admittedly...
I don't know about that, but...
I've got a better one.
The Americans and the Indians... the Europeans and the... Native Americans would be another one.
Maybe. I don't think these quite work, because the Native Americans didn't have a crystal clear image of the threat that they were facing. We're talking about people who know. I think the White Walkers in Game of Thrones are probably the best
example.
It
would be another one, actually, that's a good one.
Or Blockbuster Video.
With Netflix.
I mean, they must have seen it on the horizon, but they convinced themselves everything was going to be fine. People are still going to want videos, and then lo and behold, boom, it's all over overnight. Anyway, I digress quickly, if you would.
But what I wanted to say was I think the lack of, you know, what you're saying is the death of kind of environmentalism recently is because of, you know, the death of globalism in the last 20 years. Like everyone is turning more isolationist. And, you know, countries are now looking in. But also, I think one other thing is generally most people who, you know, care about the environment has kind of been, it's generally younger generations. And I'm a millennial, I'm quite a young millennial. And a lot of us right now kind of feel that the social contract's broken and, you know, we're just tired. It's very hard to, you know, care about the environment when, you know, you can't pay your bills. And,
this is
what,
actually, there's a word that's called cognitive load, Pav. Did you know that? Cognitive learning. There you go. We live and learn. There's a book I could recommend if I could remember what it was called.
And just one last thing. I think it will actually change quite dramatically when the millennials and the younger generations get into power.
Do you?
Whether or not it will be too late by then, I don't know.
Well, that you've combined all the stories that inspired this conversation rather perfectly. And that perhaps explains, in large part, why Zach Polanski is having such an extraordinary time of it at the moment as the new leader of the Green Party. Some polling suggesting he's the most popular among the generation that Pav describes, possibly even among other generations as well. I should double check. But I think I read under 50s, would you believe? And he's not even an MP yet. But he's playing an absolute blinder all over social media. It is, and beyond, it is 11:46, you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Wonderful film, The Lost King, but it has a rather intriguing subtext or postscript, if you prefer, which the star and writer, or the co-star and writer of the film, Steve Coogan, will be talking to us about in just a moment. And after that, of course, it being Thursday, it will be Mystery Hour. 11:46 is the time.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
Why is there delay?
Straight to the point.
This government is unravelling everywhere you look.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
How can that make sense to anyone?
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
business healthcare. Sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which...
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
I like my private details on a need-to-know basis. In other words, I need to know them and you don't. That's why I use Bitdefender whenever I'm connected, working tirelessly in the background to protect me across all my devices, keeping my digital identity confidential, on the down low, on the hush hush, trusted by the experts, used by the pros.
Bitdefender, a global leader in cybersecurity. Trusted, always.
Verify now at bitdefender.com.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
Next summer sorted. Book a Jet 2 holiday now and take your pick of our best rooms, flights and hotels. You'll get 22 kilograms of baggage included, and right now there's £120 off per couple with My Jet 2. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person and lock in the price for next summer. Jet 2 holidays. Package holidays you can trust. After National Protective. Subject to availability and conditions.
Do you know your state pension age? No. Maybe you're not sure, or you don't know how to check. It's so quick and easy to check online. All you need is your date of birth. Knowing your state pension age helps you think about your future. So check yours today. Search state pension age on gov.uk and simply enter your date of birth. State pension age. It's good to know.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
11:49 is the time. Story in the Daily Mail today, alleging that Prince Harry is an enormous hypocrite because he has described the people who control social media as exercising insidious influence over young people and indeed older people. And the people that own and control social media are polluting public discourse and affecting our health. The Daily Mail decide that he's a massive hypocrite because his wife uses social media. That is an entire page story in the Daily Mail today. The notion that because someone's wife uses social media, then you are a hypocrite if you criticise the people that own social media. And one of the reasons why Prince Harry gets the news coverage that he gets is because of his tireless pursuit of the people responsible for phone hacking. It's a small club, but you can usually tell who is in it by the way that the media reports upon their every dot and comma. Hugh Grant is in it, and my guest in the studio today, Steve Coogan, is a founding member, I think, of that group, which is partly why the coverage of a recent event has had the tone that it has had. Mm-hmm. Steve, welcome. You are here because a university academic has received substantial damages after a court ruling found that the portrayal of him in your film, The Lost King, had a defamatory meaning. Why are you here today?
Well, I was hoping to maintain a dignified silence, but given that Mr. Taylor has been running around like a headless chicken. I mean, I give him 10 out of 10 for stamina because he's been on every single program he can find. I thought it was time to just put a bit of context around things and not let him keep repeating things that I found a bit egregious. First of all, it was a settlement. It was settled because our key witness, Philippa Langley, was unwell, suffers from ME, and chronic fatigue, a debilitating condition that meant she was unable to give evidence. I was looking forward to going to court with her to have it all heard there, but we were told because we didn't have our key witness that we had one arm tied behind our back, so we decided the best thing to do was to settle. So that's what we did.
It's an illness that's portrayed in the film.
It is, yeah.
It's a key part of the story.
Yes.
Let's rewind, if we may, as to what it was that drew you to this story in the first place, because it was perhaps your interest was inspired in part by the imbalance between the academic establishment and this, a maverick? I don't know. It's an overused word.
She is definitely, unusual, Philippa. She's an amateur. Look, when this story broke about 12 years ago, it was beamed all around the world. And the message was...
This is just clarify. This is when they found
the body of Richard III in a car park in Leicester. The news was beamed all around the world, every news bulletin all around the world, about this incredible discovery. And the one person from those news reports who was conspicuous by her absence was Philippa Langley, who was the architect of the entire project. And it was only when I watched the film The King of the Car Park, I saw that she should have been front and centre. And I didn't understand why there was this disconnect. So... Jeff Pope and I started to look into it. And, she is the person who we felt, for whatever reason, was not properly recognised by the public for this crowning achievement. So we set about making a film to redress that imbalance, to give her a platform that she had been denied previously.
There was a conference, I think, where 13 people spoke.
They held a press conference to confirm the DNA analysis that the body was, in fact, those of Richard III. 13 people spoke there, academics. The 13th person to speak was Philippa Langley. Now, my question is quite simply, why did that happen? Why was she 13th to speak? Why was she not hosting the press conference and thanking Leicester University for their assistance in helping her fulfil her project to find the body of Richard III? That's not what happened.
I'll read you the statement that Richard Taylor has provided, interviewed by Andrew Marr yesterday. As you've mentioned, he's done a lot of media work. Thank you for finding time to talk to us today. Mm-hmm. Steve has accepted he's committed defamation. He's accepted costs and damages. He's accepted I didn't present a false account or marginalise Philippa's role. He's accepted I was not smug, unduly dismissive or patronising. He's accepted not to repeat these allegations or similar. He's accepted he needs to change the film. He's accepted I behaved with integrity. How have you changed the film?
We haven't changed the film in the slightest. We put a card at the beginning, effectively a notice, saying that the character in the film bears no relation to the fictitious Richard Taylor we have in the film, bears no relation to the real Richard Taylor, who behaved with integrity throughout. But apart from that, the film remains intact. It's there for all to see. It will be there in perpetuity, long after myself and Richard Taylor have shuffled off this mortal coil.
I hope this isn't an inappropriate question. How is Philippa handling this development?
She feels slightly disempowered, which is basically why we made the film, because we wanted to give her a platform. So I think she might say something quite soon about this, but it's always been very, very difficult. When we did this film, we portrayed all the characters in the film as being flawed, as being human. We did the same thing with Richard Taylor. In our minds, we didn't regard him as malevolent, malignant, or some sort of James Bond-style villain. He was doing his job. But in doing his job, he represented University of Leicester fully. Had he been acting for Philippa Langley, I wonder how he might have done it differently. If Philippa Langley was...
That's a critique and a compliment in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look, he did his job well. He said in a podcast after the body had been found, the remains had been found, he said he had to create a firewall between the University of Leicester and Philippa Langley. I don't quite know what he meant by that. I'd love to hear him explain that. I'm sure there's an innocent explanation, but I'd love to hear it.
I'd be interested to hear it as well. Because it is a film, and as you have some poetic license or some dramatic license, I came away from watching it. I loved it. Persuaded that this body would never have been found in a million years were it not for Philippa Langley.
No. Had Philippa Langley been on the payroll of Leicester University, she would have been carried in a sedan chair through the streets of Leicester with garlands laid at her feet. Her mistake was not only being not being part of Leicester University, but not even being from Leicester. And when a woman from Edinburgh comes down on the train, waltzes in and discovers a 500-year-old king on your own doorstep, it's a bit awkward.
just for people who haven't seen it, how did she know?
She did her research.
Had film written all over it. You must have sat there. Did you think someone else had already snapped up the rights?
when she told me what had happened to her, I was aghast and how she felt, how she'd been treated. But she had done the work, and she'd done the research. And when, you know, she determined where the location of the friary was in the social services car park, when the funding was withdrawn, she's the one that raised the funds that kept the project alive. When the bones finally presented themselves sticking out the side of the trench, she was the one that insisted those bones be excavated, and the injuries were consistent with those suffered by Richard III in the Battle of Bosworth. And so, therefore, you know, she'd found him. And at that point, Leicester University provided DNA analysis that confirmed that it was him. But she didn't have the resources to put her message all around Leicester, on the side of billboards, on the side of buses. She didn't have that. She was an individual.
Mm.
We gave her the means, we gave her the megaphone to tell her side of the story. You know, had Leicester University could well have, could have handled it completely differently. They could have had a press conference where they said, isn't it amazing when the amateur sometimes teaches the professional a thing or two? But they chose to go in a different direction.
What did Philippa think of the film?
She loved the film because it gave her it honoured her. It honoured the amateur. It reminds me of Darvis O'Bell's Longitude, when Cambridge University put down a challenge to measure longitude, which meant building a clock that would work at sea and be inured against the motion of the waves. And Thomas Harrison, a Yorkshire clockmaker, came along and did what all the academics at Cambridge University had failed to do. And it takes people a long time to acknowledge that. And I think eventually what I'm hoping will come out of all of this is that Philippa Langley's legacy will be the thing that is remembered. And if, by the way, if anyone wants to look into this, or they've got time on their hands or they're really bored, I encourage them to do so, to look into it on a granular level and look at the behaviour of Leicester University, look at the behaviour of Richard Taylor and come to their own conclusions. It's a fascinating topic.
It is indeed. And to be clear, you weren't being facetious at the outset when you said you would have been happy to maintain a dignified silence, but it's the absence from some of the coverage of the fact that you would have really liked to go to court, but Philippa wasn't able to testify.
Exactly.
Yes. That's why you're here today.
Yes.
For which we're grateful. Have we got time to ask what you're up to at the moment? People always want to know.
I'm about to go off and make a film with Pamela Anderson. I know, someone's got to do it.
Steve Coogan, thank you very much indeed. And I will actually recommend The Lost King. It's a proper David and Goliath story, which is somewhat ironic given the reasons why you're here to talk to us today. The time is approaching 12 noon. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where it's Thursday and it's nearly 12 noon. So it must be Mystery Hour next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the Conservative leader has called for Rachel Reeves to resign if she's committed an offence. The Chancellor's apologised for failing to obtain the correct rental licence for her family home in South East London, but the Prime Minister's decided an investigation isn't necessary after consulting his ethics adviser. Kemi Badenoch has told LBC Miss Reeves must be held to high standards.
It's obvious why they don't want to have an investigation, because if an investigation would either clear her, if they thought she'd be cleared, then they'd be very happy to have an investigation. This woman is not on top of her paperwork and she's not able to focus on growing our economy, which is the job that she has.
And the Tory leader will be taking your calls with Ian Dale from 7 this evening on LBC. An Afghan national has been remanded in custody, charged over a triple stabbing in Uxbridge in West London. Safi Darwood is accused of murdering Wayne Broadhurst and two counts of attempted murder on Monday. LBC has learned one of the UK's leading online pharmacies sold a weight loss jab to a severely anorexic woman. She used an AI-generated image to bypass Newman's checks to get hold of Wegovy. The woman's mother, Debbie, whose name and voice we've changed, says she could have died as a result.
I've been told by every practitioner that works with her that she is at serious risk of death. I have to regularly check her room for things like laxatives. But on that occasion, I found Wegovy, and I knew what that was. As a mother, when you see things like that, your heart just collapses.
Newman has apologised to Debbie and is promising to bring in extra verification tools. Donald Trump says a full US-China trade deal will be signed pretty soon. The president has met his counterpart Xi Jinping for talks in South Korea and has agreed to reduce tariffs on Chinese imports. City AM's editor Christian May has more details.
Trump said afterwards that Washington's dispute with Beijing over the supply of rare earth metals and materials has been settled, that China would resume buying US soybeans, and that Washington would reduce its tariffs on China. Trump said that if asked to score the meeting out of 10, it was definitely a 12. Xi Jinping, for his part, said that the two leaders have agreed to work very hard to overcome their differences.
And England international Michelle Adjemang will miss the rest of the season with a knee injury. The 19-year-old was stretched off in the Lionesses' 3-0 friendly victory over Australia on Tuesday. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 52 points at 97.03, and the pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather becoming more cloudy and windy this afternoon, with showers moving into the west, largely dry with bright spells in the southeast, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Simon Conway.
This Waitrose Wine Lover Week, find your perfect match with 4-for-3 on wine and fizz. Meet our smooth Argentinian Catena Malbec that can handle the rich flavours of roast beef, or the elegant number one Chablis, effortlessly charming with a cheese board. Perhaps your type is more bubbly, like our Cab de Turckheim Cremant d'Alsace, an unforgettable fling for any canapé. Find your perfect wine pairing at Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores and lines subject to availability exclude Scotland boxed wines and bottles priced £6 or under and £100 or over.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation, Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Oh, it's 3 minutes after 12. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. If you have a mystery that needs solving, a riddle that needs unravelling, an enigma where you need enlightenment, then this could be your chance. You ring me on 03456060973. You pose a poser, you ask a question, you share a mystery, something to which you know there must be an answer. It's not like, is there a god or something like that? But you haven't been able to find that answer yourself, or you've only relatively recently started puzzling over whatever it is that you're puzzling over. And then I take the baton from you and start sprinting off with it, and somebody else rings in to take the baton off me by providing an answer on, once again, 03456060973. You're absolutely right. I should have asked Steve if he would co-host Mystery Hour in the guise of Alan Partridge. In fact, I wonder if he'd ever consider doing it on his own, just in character. It would be a flipping magical moment of radio, wouldn't it? but anyway, that ship has sailed. There's a prize. You can get your hands on a Mystery Hour board game. I checked in with Base yesterday, and we are on schedule for the new miniature, Mystery Hour 2.0. It's a whole new bunch of questions, a different format, and you'll be able to fit it in your pocket. That is hopefully going to be with us by Christmas. So the Mystery Hour 1.0 is destined to become a collector's item. I don't actually know if we're going to continue producing that, manufacturing that, after we've started making the second one. But either way, you can get your hands on one for free, at mysteryhour.co.uk. Just go and have a look at the website. You can buy them there, but you'll find out more about it. And the terms and conditions for this competition are at lbc.co.uk. So just to clarify, you can get one for free if you make my favourite contribution of the day. We give one away every week. And if you're not lucky enough to win one, you can buy one by going to mysteryhour.co.uk. And the new one will be out in time for Christmas. It's much funnier, actually. I mean, the funniest bit is the wrong answers to the question. So if you don't know, you get a card in the old game with one wrong answer, one right answer on it, and then you make up an answer of your own. You get extra points if the people guess that your made-up answer is the correct answer. You get points if they pick the wrong answer, but you get the picture. On the tin version, the new mini version, the pocket version, there are two made-up answers, and that's why it's funnier, because the
professionally made up answers are, it's a bit too much pressure. My mother-in-law couldn't get her head around the responsibility of coming up with a wrong answer. So it actually makes the game a lot easier. I know for some people that's the favourite bit, but no one is stopping you from carrying on playing Format 1.0 as we move on to also embrace Format 2.0. And I've got one phone line free. 03456060973 is the number you need. 6 minutes after 12 is the time. Bill is on the Isle of Wight in Newport. Bill, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Why is the GMT we're living under at the moment so lopsided? Because at the moment there's 57 days from when we changed the clocks last Sunday to solstice, or the 21st of December.
Right.
On the other end, it goes 98 days until we put the clocks forward again.
So, you, theoretically, hang on, 98, 155, it would be 77 and a half days. There should be like 78, 77 days on either side.
I mean, looking at the sunrise and sunset times for London, I know it varies in different
half
parts
past
of the country.
Four.
We get a total amount of daylight when we put the clocks back of 11 hours and 15 minutes. But when we put the clocks forward again, we got 12 and a three quarter hours. Doesn't make sense.
I'm not going to lie to you, Bill.
Yeah?
I don't really understand your question. But working on the premise that I'm not very bright at this kind of thing, someone listening will, and they'll be able to answer it. Were you not slightly perturbed when I just shouted half past four for no reason a moment ago?
No, I was shivering in the corner waiting to see whether you'd pick me up or not.
Why are you cold? Because half past four was sunset yesterday.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe how early it was. And you get to summer, and if someone said to you, do you know the sunset's at half past four in winter in this country? And probably earlier now, because we've only just turned the clocks back. You'd go, yeah, don't be daft, it doesn't set at half past four. Then you remember school, and actually sometimes you'd finish school and it would almost be dark already, so you'd actually think, no, it does actually. I was supposed to play tennis yesterday, and I booked a court for 5 o'clock, it was pitch black.
Yeah.
You don't sound very interested in my anecdotes, Bill.
It just underlines what I'm saying. I mean, I'm 80, so I lived through the 3 years we had British Standard Time, and I thought that made much more sense.
When was that, then? During the war?
68 to 73. The Labour government
years.
Brought it in, and then the Heath government in 71 did away with it.
I had no idea. So why is it so... Not why do we do it, necessarily, why is it so lopsided?
Yes, that's the question I'm asking.
It's a great question, Bill. Thank you. When you said you were shivering, was that nerves or are you actually cold?
No, that was nerves.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
Right, let's help Bill out. Let's warm him up. Let's warm him up with a happy answer. Come on, why is GMT so lopsided? Something about 70, 68, 73. I didn't understand that bit of it, but he's got a point, clearly. And you can put him out of his misery, metaphorically speaking. Ken's in Basingstoke. Ken, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Ken.
Right, the scenario is you're cooking dinner.
Hang on. I'm just getting into character. Okay, go on, Carrie. What am I cooking?
A dinner.
Okay, a dinner. Thank you.
Meat, veg, and potatoes.
Oh, okay.
Meat's ready, veg are ready. Potatoes are a bit hard.
Oh, no. Well, yes, I've just put a fork in them. It won't go through nicely. So, you're right. Go on.
So, you look in the pan, it's boiling, so it's 100 degrees C.
Yeah.
If you turn the heat up, will they cook quicker since it's already at boiling point?
No.
All right, thank you.
You're very well. I mean, you can't get hotter than boiling point with water.
So why do you turn the heat up then, to make them boil more fiercely?
Well, they don't boil more fiercely. If they're boiling more fiercely, they will cook quicker, but it's not at 100 degrees. So simmering or boiling? Oh, I'm losing confidence, Ken. I thought I had this one covered, but you're picking holes in my certainty. When you said boiling, I presumed you meant it was 100 degrees centigrade.
Yeah, it's bubbling away.
Higher.
No. So is it a waste of energy to turn the heat up?
Well, not if you can see more bubbles. Because if it is bubbling more vigorously, then it wasn't at 100 degrees centigrade previously.
No. Of course it is. If it's bubbling and it's already 100 degrees...
I don't know if it is.
Yes, of course it is. If it's
bubbling, you're very dismissive, Ken, considering that you're the one that rang in with the mystery.
Okay.
Well, I didn't mean to be rude. I just think that if it's not at boiling point when the first bubble appears, is it?
Well, I think so, yes.
Well, then it can't be 100 degrees centigrade, because then when more bubbles appear, it must be at 105 degrees centigrade, which is a physical impossibility for water.
Well, quite. That's my point. I was looking at it and thinking, it's already boiling, so just turning the heat up...
Well, I think this is going to be about the definition of boiling, actually, because if it is genuinely boiling, if it's at 100 degrees centigrade, then I can say with some confidence, albeit I got an E in my O-level physics, I can say with some confidence that it can't get any hotter.
Okay.
But if it's bubbling and not boiling, then turning it up would make it hotter, and therefore the potatoes would cook quicker. But you and I aren't quite sure when bubbling and boiling meet.
Okay, well, see if somebody rings in with a good answer.
Yeah, are you suggesting mine isn't a very good answer?
I'm not convinced, put it that way.
Nor am I. Ken takes some convincing. What do you reckon? I mean, I should know that, shouldn't I? We should both know that. He's older than me, I think. He should know that. He's been around longer. So you got GMT and you got potatoes. Kate's in Toronto. Kate, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
I'm wondering why, when we know that genetic diversity in populations is really important, right? We can't make babies with our brothers and cousins without a lot of issues.
Correct.
Why is it that and also it's quite gross, but why is it...
Well, especially brothers.
That, oh, yes, horrible, horrible stuff. Why is it that colony insects can reproduce with the same queen laying all the eggs... And then they're fertilized by ostensibly her brothers or sons, because they're fertilized by the drones in the colony that she's either laid eggs for or is the brother of. Why is that possible for colonies to survive and not have genetic issue? Why is there no...
So the entire colony is siblings and or cousins, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, I mean, this is not my area of expertise, Kate. I don't know if that's going to come as a major surprise to you. But we don't know for sure that there are not. I mean, first of all, genetic problems in the scenarios you described involving cousins and siblings are very, very rare, even though, you know, the phenomenon is quite well documented. Royal families, for example, routinely married first cousins. I think Queen Victoria married her first cousin, and I don't know that any of their children had problems. If they did, it would be a relatively tiny proportion. So possibly they do in insect colonies, and we just don't notice.
Well,
go on, then.
I mean, fair, but I would argue, you know, yes, you use the example of royal families, and for sure, for hundreds of years, they've all sort of interbred across Europe, as an example.
But I don't want to be vulgar. I don't want to be vulgar, but if let's say, a bee was born with 12 wings, they'd probably just eat it. They'd probably just eat it in the hive, wouldn't they? They'd turn on it. And also, they're not mammals.
Fair enough.
They're not mammals, either.
That's true, but I'm trying to understand, like, zoom out, because we're talking about hundreds of thousands of years of bees doing this same thing. It's not small bits of the population. It's like you would imagine that over time that would be unsustainable, that there would be some genetic issue that would take bees down or not really allow colony animals to... I don't know. I'm just curious because almost every other animal I can think of...
But it's not an animal. I'm sorry to be pedantic, but that might be the answer to the question.
I mean, they're part of the animal kingdom.
Yeah, but they're insects. Well, they're not mammals.
Yeah, they're insects.
Okay, so why... Well, I mean, it's a two-parter, isn't it, unintentionally? Do you have genetic mutation in insect colonies? And if not, why not? Because there might be things that are a consequence of all the... Well, essentially, you're describing inbreeding, but that may not be a... I like this question, but it may not have a very interesting answer, is all I'm warning you in advance about.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I'll hold tight then.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you. You can see how interested I am in the questions today by tuning into the live broadcast on TikTok. Are we also putting it out live on the LBC app? Oh, my goodness. I'd have brushed my hair if I'd known. Quick shout out to Adam, who tuned in, I think, during Ken's question, or possibly Bill's, and asked whether or not Alan Partridge was still on the program, which is reasonable. It's 12:15.
This is LBC. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m.
If you're in a position where another £1,000 to find is the difference between you going on holiday and you not going on holiday, I do actually think, for a week, the one family holiday you get to take that year is actually a good reason for you to miss school with your child.
Tom Swarbrick.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
LBC.
In a world speeding to make car finance claims, make sure you're in full control. You don't need to go with a claims company and risk losing more than 30% of what you're owed. Put yourself in pole position. Don't rush. Be ready.
Looking to make a claim on your car finance? Get 100% of the facts. Go to fca.org.uk/car-finance-claims.
Claiming soon.
At Thames Water, we're replacing hundreds of miles of old pipes with brand new ones that will reduce leakage and last for generations to come. Making our network better for everyone. All part of our biggest network upgrade in 150 years. Search Thames Water's biggest upgrade.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 12:17. Why is GMT so lopsided? Ken's potatoes and Kate's insects. Roger's in Bromley. Roger, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
Yeah, I've got a VHF radio licence because I've got a small yacht and you have to have one to use the radio.
But Roger.
Why do people use the word Roger,
Roger
to acknowledge a message? Yeah, all right.
Roger.
Instead of Keith or James.
God, you could have used a false name. You could have called yourself John. You've rung Roger, to ask a question about Roger.
Well, my real name's Roger.
I know he is, but what did you think I was going to do with a bloke called Roger who rang in to ask why we say Roger when we're saying yes?
Well, it's fairly predictable, James.
Yes, I am. Nothing if not predictable. Roger.
So I'm fascinated by why that is, because in my VHF radio handbook, I don't think that you say Roger, you say acknowledge or something like that.
Yeah, I think this has come up before.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, actually.
And is it, I think it's the R you're looking for, isn't it? What's R in the NATO alphabet?
It's Romeo, Ronco, isn't it?
Romeo.
Yeah.
I think it just means received.
Okay.
So R for received, R for Roger.
Are you an expert in this?
Am I what?
An expert.
Oh, yes. Roger. I'll leave it. Do you want me to leave it on the board? I sense from your...
Yes, please.
Yeah, thank all right, you. Roger.
Yeah.
Roger.
Yeah, Roger that.
Yeah. Roger that. you never say the name when you say Roger, do you? You don't say Roger, no, Roger, or Roger James.
No, you say...
Roger that.
You say acknowledge or understand or something like that.
Yeah, I like this. Is it the same on planes?
I don't know.
We could ask Jones the pilot,
couldn't we? I've got a plane, I've got a yacht.
You might know. It wasn't a silly question. You might have known. Given your interest in this subject, you might have done a little bit of research into whether people say Roger on planes as well as yachts. You don't have to confine your interest in the universe to things that you actually own, Roger. Roger?
Okay, well, I could have Googled it, but I thought it'd be more fun to phone you.
What's the boat called, Roger?
It's called after my mother, which is Eileen Mary.
Oh, that's lovely. I'm not going to make any jokes about that, obviously, Roger.
No.
Thank you, mate. Okay. Stay safe. Happy sailing. Bon voyage. 20 minutes after 12 is the time. So what I love about this, and I'm a very easily pleased little mind, is I write down on the piece of paper in front of me when I remember a short description of what the question was on the left-hand side of the page. And this is for the benefit of people who are joining us live on TikTok or indeed live on the LBC app. And then on the right-hand side of the page, I write the name of the person that has asked the question. So today we've got GMT, Bill, Cooking, Ken, Insects, Kate, and guess what I've just written down now? Yeah? Just me, is it, that's delighted by this? Roger?
Vanda is in Monmouth. Vanda, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I have a question.
Carry on.
I'm just hanging out in the kitchen with my kids. We're
lovely.
Just talking about general stuff.
Hello!
And we were talking about teeth, and they asked, why do we have milk teeth? And then we started talking and debating, and my mum joined in the conversation, and we don't know. Why do mammals have milk teeth?
I think I know this, but if the kids don't know this and you show them a picture later, it's going to come, Halloween is going to come early in your house, Amanda. I'm warning you now, because in their little faces, their grown-up teeth are already sitting there in their skull.
Yes, but why? Why don't they just come through straight away?
Well, because imagine what they'd look like if they did. They'd look like Alan Carr. They'd have these tiny little mouths. I'm sure he can take a joke, but you know what I mean. The teeth are far too big at the moment for their little mouths, and when so this probably is an evolutionary development. So you need little teeth when you've got a little mouth, but as your mouth gets bigger, you're going to need bigger teeth. Otherwise, you'd have massive gaps between all your tiny baby teeth.
Oh, maybe, that does make sense.
It does, doesn't it?
Okay.
I've had a similar question before. That's the only reason why I know. But I was hoping that you'd be more freaked out by the knowledge that your little treasures have already got their full-size teeth sitting in their skull at the moment. Because when you see, forgive me for being a little bit morbid, but it is Halloween tomorrow, I think. When you see a skull with the baby teeth and the adult teeth in place, it's one of the weirdest things you've ever seen.
I know, I feel like I want to see an X-ray now.
Yeah, you don't need an X-ray. Well, yeah, you can see it on the X-ray probably, but you can also see it. Yeah, do that. Google X-ray to show the kids. Don't Google skulls, even though it is Halloween tomorrow. But that is the answer. So you have milk teeth when you've got a little mouth, and then as your mouth gets bigger, obviously, if you didn't have new teeth coming through, you'd look like a graveyard.
Oh.
You'd have, like, a tiny little tooth, and then a whole load of gum, and then a tiny little tooth, and then a whole load of gum, and then a tiny little tooth, and then a whole load of gum. I'm doing this visually for the benefit of when you go onto TikTok later and show the children. And therefore, the big teeth come through, so you've got a full set of choppers.
Oh, well, fantastic. Thank you very much, James. I think you deserve a round of applause.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you very much. What are the children called? Let me shout a big hello to them.
The eldest is called Zosan, and the youngest is called Ida.
God, we lost the sight. We lost the line a bit. Zosan and Ida. Take care. Zosan and Ida, happy Thursday. Happy mystery hour. 23 minutes after 12 is the time. Thank you. That was nice. Sally is in Stourbridge. So we're having a bit of a run on Stourbridge. Were you on last week?
I was.
You've snuck
Listen,
through.
I've been listening to you for 9 years,
yes.
Significantly.
And
I've spoken to you twice in 2 weeks.
Both in the same fortnight. There's something odd going on there, Sally. Well, I guess
level of intellect.
Well, I mean, it can be a very high level of intellect on Mystery. It depends on the question, which leads me to ask you a question or answer.
It's a question, and it's something I just find a bit weird and perplexing.
Yes.
So, why is it that it only seems to be very posh people who have a speech impediment,
that's
particularly
just not
around
true.
The R's?
It's just
you know
not
what
true.
I mean?
No.
Well, I don't know anyone with a speech impediment. I know loads of people. I'm a teacher. And every time I hear someone on the radio who's posh, they can't pronounce their R's.
Well, it's that's simply affectation. Not. There's lots of posh people on the radio who can pronounce their R's.
Yes, I know. No,
oh,
you're
sorry.
Getting it the wrong way around.
Roger.
Why stop it? Why is it that there are more posh people with a speech impediment than people who aren't posh?
The central premise may be wrong. We may not actually, but I mean, Jonathan Ross isn't posh, for example.
No, that is true.
And he has precisely the speech impediment that you describe. But I think it might be P.G. Woodhouse's fault. Or at least it might be the fault of the television, the Fry and Laurie version of P.G. Woodhouse. When the sort of Gussie Fink Nottles and that lot all seem to have speech impediments.
Have you noticed it with sometimes when you have experts or whatever and you think, I can't listen to what you're saying?
But you'd think that if we associate posh with wealth, you'd have thought that those parents would be more likely to employ a speech therapist to address
exactly my point.
Who is posh? Can you think of a posh person with a speech impediment?
Well, now you ask me, I can't, but I know.
It kind of undermines your question a bit, Sal.
It does. Well, I was thinking of Rishi Sunak. It's after those people have gone to public schools, for instance, where you think they'd have had it beaten out of them, wouldn't they?
Those were the days. Well, having attended a public school, I got beaten for pretty much everything else, but never for having a speech impediment, because I don't actually have one. I don't think your question, mate... we'll find out. Are posh people more likely to have a speech impediment?
Maybe it is just my perception, but my ears picked up, and I think, why don't you fix that, mate?
Yeah, or posh people are more likely to be on the telly, and therefore, even though the representation is the same, you're more likely to encounter them. But if you've been a teacher across it in the classroom, it could be linked to Kate's question. It could all be down to the inbreeding. It's 26. Willis, watcher. It's 26 minutes after 12. I think Mike Tyson has a speech impediment. And I mean, I'd call him whatever he wanted me to call him if he was in the room now. If he wants to be called posh, I'll call him posh. But I don't think many people would objectively, without fear of repercussions, call him posh. Sally, thank you. Elliot's in Wakefield. Elliot, question or answer?
Yeah, it's an answer.
Carry on, Elliot.
It's about the potatoes.
Yeah, go on. You sound like you're ringing the complaint line at Sainsbury's.
It's finally another use for the physics that I teach at school.
Marvellous.
So I'll be able to explain to my students that there's actually a different application to this. However, in previous exams, they do seem to talk about potatoes in boiling water an awful lot, so here we are. So, we'll focus on the liquid. So when you heat up a liquid, you add energy into that system, you are making the particles vibrate more, and we determine that as an increase in temperature.
Yes.
Right. Once the liquid gets to the boiling point, you can still add energy into the system. At that point, what you're doing is the energy, instead of increasing the temperature of the water, is increasing the distance between the particles, or what we call the potential energy, instead of the kinetic energy, the movement of the particles.
Okay.
So the energy you're putting into the system then is not increasing increasing the temperature of the water, it's changing the state of the liquid water into a gas. When you are turning
the hob up... So it's not going to cook any quicker?
Correct, yeah. Right. So when you're turning the hob up, all you're doing is increasing the rate in which your liquid is turning into a gas. You're not increasing the temperature of the water because it's already at 100 degrees Celsius.
Wow, that's one of my favourite answers in a long time, actually, because it popped all the bubbles, if you like, that floated up while Ken was asking the question. When is boiling point achieved? It's not when the first bubble. If you were to predict boiling point solely by looking at the water, at what point would you press the button?
But like a lot of things, there's a normal distribution of temperatures. So the whole pan, if we assume a pan,
a rolling boil. When the whole pan hits a rolling boil, you're at 100 degrees centigrade. But if you turn it up, then it will actually have an effect, but not on the temperature.
Yeah, the first part. The first part is called the specific heat capacity of the water. It's specific to each individual substance, and then the change of state part is the specific latent heat of the water. And your GCSE student going into exams at the end of this year should hopefully know that.
Very neatly, very neatly explained. Qualifications? I know you've told us, but for the tape.
Well, teach science.
That'll do. I mentioned earlier that I got an E in O-level physics, Elliot. Yeah. If I'd had you as a teacher, I like to think I might have got a D.
That's very kind of you.
Is it? It's half past 12. Round of applause for Elliot. Round of applause for Elliot.
Thank you.
We need more questions, apparently, but although the board is full, so we'll get rid of some of the rubbish, and then you can ring in and get yourself on the board with a new question, although we still need quite a lot of answers. Simon Conway, meanwhile, has your headlines.
Opposition parties say the Chancellor should face an investigation after she admitted failing to get a licence to rent out her home. Rachel Reeves has apologised, which Sakir Starmer says is enough. An Afghan migrant has appeared in court charged with murder and attempted murder over a triple stabbing on Monday. 22-year-old Safi Darwood is accused of killing Wayne Broadhurst and injuring two other people in Uxbridge in West London. And the UK government says it's preparing charter flights to help stranded British nationals leave Jamaica after Hurricane Melissa. More than 30 people are now known to have died in the powerful storm across the Caribbean. LBC weather becoming more cloudy and windy, with showers moving into the west this afternoon. Largely dry with bright spells in the southeast. A high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
At Wix, we can help you get the job done. Get what you need, picked and ready, in as little as 15 minutes with click and collect. And right now, save on timber, doors, flooring and more in the big event. Shop the big event, in-store or online. Terms apply.
The drive past glowing pumpkins on doorsteps, plotting the kids' trick-or-treating route. With the Clever Jazz full hybrid and its famous magic seats, you have the flexibility to handle everything from the school run to a weekend away. Because every journey matters. Book a test drive at Yeoman's Honda today. Honda, the power of dreams.
In 2024, a hangry fan posted, "Why do other countries have better McDonald's menus than ours?" So, we went abroad and heisted some worldwide favourites. The World Menu Heist. 9 of the most wanted McDonald's menu items from around the world. Now in the UK. Until 25th of November from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Welcome our new bookworms to the club. Now, do you read traditional books or e-books?
Oh, real books.
Traditional, well, always.
Yes, quite.
I read e-books. Yeah, I adjust it so the font's huge.
Ooh, they make large font books.
Think bigger. Imagine Moby Dick all cuddled up with a book. His font size.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe it's time for varifocals. At Specsavers, get 2-for-1 varifocal glasses from £110. Conditions and exclusions apply. See online for details.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 33 minutes after 12. If you're enjoying this on TikTok, don't forget to double tap the screen and like. Yeah? Is that what it's called? Yeah. Nice one. Hashtag Misties. No? As in Mystery Hour? No? Okay. Steve's in Basildon. Steve, question or answer?
Good afternoon, James. It's an answer for you.
Oh, marvellous.
Hopefully. And I hope I can make it clear enough. It's the Roger Roger answer.
Marvellous. I can't remember. Do you remember the name of the bloke who asked that question?
I think it was Roger, or it could have been Roger.
That's the fella. Carry on.
It goes back to the very early days of Morse code. And people would speak in the phonetic alphabet. Now, to start off with, the letter R for received was dot dash dot, or as we like to call it in the trade, didardit. This can send you crazy, yes. Honestly, which is why I don't do it anymore. But Roger was the phonetic spelling of our phonetic word for R in the alphabet.
Okay.
But it was later changed to Romeo to make things easier. It was Roger was easily confused, whereas Romeo is much more harsher sibilance to it, which makes it easier to understand.
Romeo, Roger. Yeah, you could mishear Roger more easily than you would mishear Romeo.
You can indeed. So the whole lot was gone over. Roger was scrapped, but the oldies, as oldies, we still use it, I'm afraid.
No, and I mean, why wouldn't you? Because at some point, in order to change it, you'd have had people saying Romeo and people saying Roger. So you either had to leave it the same or risk the safety of maritime travel.
That's correct.
Qualifications?
You tend to find that a lot of airline pilots will still use the word Roger, but a lot of sea-going and amateur radio people use Romeo. My qualifications. I'm a qualified marine radar communications engineer.
Yeah, that'll do, I think. I mean, when you say qualified, what is it? A correspondence course,
No, it's three and a half years at a nautical college, learning radar and going crazy, listening to Morse code all hours of the day.
Oh wow! Can you talk in Morse code? No, of course you can't, because it's just
we used to.
You tried to.
We
you could
college,
do.
We, we used to go down to Students' Union Bar, and to practice, instead wow. of talking normally to each other, we would speak in terms of di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da-di.
And then five pints in.
Yeah, and then you'd go down to the bar and you'd start speaking like that to the barman, and he'd look at you and go, coarse words.
Pint a mile. Pint a mile, please, barman. Steve, have a round of applause on me. I'd love that, mate. That's nice.
Take care.
No, you too. I hope Roger's happy with that, Roger. Roger! If I was Steve, I'd have pretended my name was Roger when I rang in with that answer, but that's because I'm very, very childish. Carl's in Liverpool. Carl, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Carl.
So, where I live in Nottingham, which is actually a real place, not a fictional place, there is a road that has a pedestrian crossing on it. It's a pelican crossing, I think, the one where you press the button.
Hmm.
Now, it doesn't have any impact on any of the traffic when the cars have to stop at those lights.
Yeah.
So, it's basically just a normal two-way road, just a crossing across the road. You press those lights. Why does it not change the lights to red instantly when it has no impact and there's no other traffic lights coming up?
So you walk up, you walk up to the crossing.
Yeah.
No cars to the left of you, no cars to the right of you.
Well, it's not that... I mean, there could be, the road could be quite busy, but what I mean is there's no crossing roads, there's no junctions, there's no... If those cars stop at those lights, it doesn't have any impact on traffic coming in other directions because it's only going in those two directions, if you see what I mean.
I do, but, I mean, they're all linked, aren't they?
But there's no other traffic lights.
This is a motoring question.
I know.
How did you get on?
It's more a pedestrian. It's a pedestrian crossing.
That is very, very, very. Sorry, a pedestrian. It's not a pedestrian question. It's a motoring. It's a pedestrian crossing.
It's
not a motorist stopping. It's a pedestrian crossing. It's not a traffic light. If it was a traffic light, your point. Isn't this interesting? So if it's a traffic light, you would still have the same phenomenon unfolding, but because it is a pedestrian crossing, you've managed to insulate yourself from the horrors of having asked a motoring question on Mystery Hour, haven't you? Look at that. So why doesn't it change immediately?
Yeah. Because then also as well, because what often happens is you press that button, you're waiting for the light to go red, and then you find a break in the traffic anyway, so you manage to get across before the lights go
red. That's also true. And then the cars have to stop for someone who's not standing. And also little children go past and press the button sometimes just for fun because it's there.
Yeah.
I imagine, you don't want, when you say immediately, you don't mean like bang, because then the cars would be skidding to a halt but you mean much more quickly.
Yeah, because sometimes you could be waiting for, I think, probably a minute before it changes.
Yeah, you're lucky, actually, that isn't a motoring question, and it's only on a very, very, very tight technicality that it's not a motoring question, but it's on the board. Thank you, Carl. 12:38 is the time. Melissa is in Edinburgh. Melissa, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
Why, when some people see something really cute, do we want to squeeze it or, like, bite it or just be really aggressive towards it? And other people don't have that impulse.
Someone showed me, I mentioned it the other day, when Prunella Scales passed, actually, because her long, long, long marriage to Timothy West, who we lost last year, was such a paragon of romance. And that morning, someone had sent me, it was my wife, had sent me a picture of sea otters who hold each other in the sea so that they don't float away. And you've not seen, and you're exactly right, there's a clenching, isn't there?
I think it's called cuteness aggression.
Is that a thing? Is it called cuteness aggression?
Yeah, apparently it's got a name, but some people have that impulse, like I do, when we see our baby, but my husband doesn't, and he thinks I'm crazy.
So what is that all about? What is cuteness aggression? And why do we do it? Well, we know what it is, but why do some of us have it?
Yeah.
What is going on there when the cuteness aggression kicks in? I think I have it. I don't hope that. I think I do. You've got to grab someone's little cheeks, don't you? Your little cheeks like that. That's cuteness aggression as well. I think this is squeezy, squeezy. Squeezy, squeezy, squeezy. Okay, you're on. I like it. How's the baby?
She's fine. 5 months old. She's just on my lap just now, and I can't. Yeah, it's very hard not to squeeze her.
Well, be careful. It's 22 on. Thank you, Melissa. Cuteness, aggression. I don't think we've had this before. That's a lovely question. What's going on when for, among those of us who suffer from, if that's the right verb to use, cuteness, aggression? Jonathan's in Malta. Jonathan, question or answer?
It's an answer, James, please. A bit of a supplementary to Elliot's answer on the boiling potatoes question.
Stewart's inquiry, just a supplementary.
I don't like to say it. So Elliot was, I think, was 95% right. His scientific explanation was perfect. I'm an engineer, a chemical engineer, rather than a scientist. Perfect. I'd just like to add one thing. I'd just like to challenge his position at the end, where he said the potatoes wouldn't cook any quicker.
Oh.
Absolutely correct. The water stays at 100 degrees regardless of how fast it's boiling. But when you turn the heat up, the water boils more vigorously. So it creates much more turbulence in the water.
Yeah.
And that increases the rate of heat transfer into the potatoes or rice or spaghetti or whatever you've got in the pan. So it does. It's a secondary effect, but probably, and I also
but
know
they're already hot. There's no more heat to transfer into them if they've been in the boiling water for 5 minutes.
Yeah, but that's because all of the potato hasn't reached a temperature where it's fully cooked. And that temperature is coming from sitting in the boiling water. So over, thinking of potatoes or, let's say, spaghetti, for example, that you might cook for 10 minutes. If you have a vigorous boil, it might make 30 seconds difference to the cooking, just a bit quicker.
No, I recognise that. From my own culinary adventures.
Yeah. So just a little addition, which actually changes the fundamental answer to the question. But
yeah, no, I like it. And in fact, you're both right, but you're bringing your different areas of expertise to the same table, which is what Mystery Hour is all about. Qualifications, I know you told us, but tell us again.
I'm a chemical engineer, and also I cook a lot.
Round of applause for our chemical engineer cook, Jonathan. What are you cooking tonight?
Thanks, James.
What are you cooking tonight?
I'm actually on a choir tour in Malta, so I'll be eating in a restaurant.
Oh, very smart.
Somewhere, yeah.
But I do know. Tell from your voice that you've got a good singing voice. You've got a sort nice timbre, haven't you? You've got a nice resonance.
I'm a bottom bass, actually. So I'm
enough about your private life, mate. I was talking about your singing. It's 12:42. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Max is in Sudbury. Max, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
To the insect colony question?
I think we may have had the cuteness aggression question before from the number of people telling me that we have. I've explained many times in the past that my memory is not what it used to be. But the, there we go. Anyway, on you go with the colony, with the insects.
Okay, so I'm going to take it from the perspective of honeybees. When a colony produces a new queen, we will refer to it as a virgin queen. And to mate, she will actually leave the hive, and she goes on a mating flight. And she'll fly at a specific height, and she releases pheromones. And they're hopefully going to attract drones, the males, from other colonies. And this is the only time she's actually going to mate in her entire life.
Oh.
And she'll mate with multiple males. So they'll take it in turns as they find her. One will come along, they'll mate. That actually causes his sex organs to explode. He'll die.
Blimey.
It actually blocks her up. The next one comes along, unplugs, and she just goes on like this until she's pretty much done for the day.
Yeah.
And then she'll
all their sex organs explode. It's not a question of luck.
It's just the males, they die. It's a fatal activity.
So they have, I mean, it's a one-shot game, as it were.
It's one shot and done.
Okay.
And she'll store the sperm for her entire life. In an organ called a spermatheca. And she will start a new colony or overtake the old colony. And every time she lays an egg which is going to be fertilized, a worker egg, she lowers her abdomen into a cell. And the distance that spreads her legs apart will add one sperm to one egg, and she fertilizes that one egg. So that's it. She won't mate with anyone within the hive, within her colony.
I'm absolutely gobsmacked by about four separate things that you've just told us.
And she'll live for years. So that sperm will live in her body in an organ being stored for years. And there will be multiple different fathers to all the female workers within the hive.
So the premise of Kate's question was flawed, really. Because she thought the drones were living in the hive and then popping upstairs to service the queen.
Yeah, I mean, you'll get drones living in the hive, but
they won't be the drones that have
inside the hive.
They won't be the drones that have mated with the queen. So you could have a bit of sibling issues because when she's gone off on her little
pheromone spreading. She could have attracted drones from the same. She could have attracted brother drones.
Yeah, 100%.
But wow.
So that's just a numbers game, basically.
Yeah. And do we know whether there are genetic mutations? There must be. There must be some bees that are born with mutations, with issues.
Yeah, I suppose it can happen, especially with beekeepers now. A lot of it will be selective breeding as well, and you can get really angry queens and you can get happy queens, and their pheromones will dictate the kind of temperament of the entire hive. So you can be like, okay, that one's really angry, I'm going to requeen it.
Really? What do they get angry about? I mean, to be fair, you've given us a few pointers, but that would leave every queen angry, not just that one. I'd have thought the drone would be angrier, but it's too late by the time he realises sex organs have blown up for him to express an opinion.
Well, thankfully, the drones actually can't sting. The male honeybees can't sting at all. They're pretty useless. But if you've got several beehives, you'll notice one is an aggressive one. You go near it and everyone's aggy, and another one you can just do what you want with it. It's really
right? Isn't that fascinating? I think I've worked out, but I have to ask you anyway. What are your qualifications?
I'm a freelance ecologist and beekeeper.
How many hives do you keep?
About 12.
A bit of a delay on the line. I love that. Thank you. I'm absolutely fascinated by that. I don't know why. You've kind of robbed me of the power of rational thought. I'm just marvelling at least for, well, I've already said that just to prove my point. Have a round of applause.
Thank you.
Great stuff, Max.
Cheers, James.
Special message for Kate in Toronto who asked that question. Kate, those were not the drones you were looking for.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Rachel Reeves has broken housing rental rules at an extremely risky time for her politically over tax increases. Like Keir Starmer, are you minded to gloss over it?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
I always thought it should be me looking after Mum in her golden years. After all she's done for me, I wanted to be the one to support her. But I couldn't be with her all the time. So I contacted Home instead. After their first visit, Mum was over the moon, telling me all about the laughs they'd shared over a cup of tea. And that's when I realised it didn't need to be me looking after Mum. Just someone who cares for her like I do. Find out more about award-winning, personalised home care at homeinstead.co.uk.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.5% AER variable. That includes a 2% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that once-in-a-lifetime adventure. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18+ UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.41% gross. Terms apply.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low. And we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track, we certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero-emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It's 12:49 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Sally's question. Are POS people more likely to have speech impediments? And if so, why? I don't know that we're going to get anywhere with that. Carl wants to know why the
pedestrian crossing light doesn't change quicker after you've pressed the button. Shall I tell you why we don't do motoring questions? And he only got off on a technicality because it's a pedestrian crossing as opposed to a traffic light. I've got half a dozen messages now berating Carl for being one of those people that doesn't wait for the light to change before he presses the button, but who will press the button and then there'll be a gap in the traffic so he'll nip over, but the button has already been pressed. That is a really silly thing to get cross about, because even if he waited, you would still have to stop. So this is why I hate motoring questions, because you drag me in to your pathetic universe. You would still have to stop, right? Whether he's standing there or not. So he gets to the thing, and there's cars going past, zoom, 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 and he presses the button, and the cars, zoom, 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 oh, and then the cars stop a bit, but the lights haven't changed, so he crosses the road. And then the light changes just as you're approaching it, so you then have to stop, even though there's no one there to cross the road. But if he had waited for the light to change, like you're saying he should have done, you would still have to. It makes no difference whatsoever to your life. You're just irritated by it because you can't. So that's why I hate motoring questions, because of you. Neil's in Athlone in Ireland. Neil, question or answer?
James, I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
Just something that's always bothered me. All the greatest English guitar players, Peter Green, Brian May, Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck, they were all born within 20 miles of each other.
Shut up.
And yeah. And
I thought Jimmy Page was American.
1946. Yeah. So they're all from that one region. And I don't know why. Was there something in the water, or was there somebody really good at teaching in that area?
Why did I think Jimmy Page was American?
I don't know.
Have I gone mad?
I'm thinking of someone else, aren't I, Roger?
Oh, yeah, no, okay, I am going mad. He wasn't from my neck of the woods, like John Bonham and Robert Plant were, so in my mind I've concluded that he must have been from America because he wasn't from Kidderminster.
Peter Green was from Bethnal Green, yeah. Brian May's from Hampton, Eric Clapton's from Ripley, Jimmy Page is from Heston, and Jeff Beck is from Wallington.
If you get an answer to this question, I'll give you the money myself, but it's an absolutely fascinating little nugget, isn't it?
Yeah,
Heston. Yeah, Jimmy Page is from Heston, just up the road from me.
Yeah.
Why might it have been? Does it fit with, no, because that book, so their age, they're a very similar age, so that is easy to understand why, because it's about influences, and who was the book by? Was it Lonnie Donegan? Yeah. Who wrote, no, not Lonnie Donegan, someone wrote a book, Bert someone. A lot of people start. Who?
Bert Jansch.
Was it?
Yeah.
Guy who wrote the book that lots of people started playing the guitar with.
Yeah. So was there a bookshop there that had that book and they all borrowed it? I don't know. Keith Richards was from very close as well. He was from Dartford, so he wasn't the main.
This wouldn't work as a question unless it was such an extraordinary aligning of guitar hero planets on this one little plot of land. Because there were other great guitarists, but you've named arguably the greatest.
I think so, and something to be very proud of, obviously, if you're over there. But it's like there's so many great musicians in Ireland, but there's in Donegal, they're in Dublin, they're in Derry, you know. But that small one spot.
Bert Whedon,
you're right.
That's
wasn't Bert Dutch, he was a jazz guy.
Yeah, Bert Whedon. I mean, like I say, if anyone can answer this question, Neil, I don't know what I'll do. I'll give you half of my overnight oats as a present. But thanks for bringing it to our attention. I'll give you a little treat in return. But there's a Brian May episode of Full Disclosure in the archive if you've not listened to it. It's a really lovely interview.
I talked to him once about fox hunting. He's a really great advocate.
Big animal rights man.
We had a great conversation. Yeah, he's a great guy.
He's a lovely fella, a really lovely fella. It's a nice interview as well. 12:54 is the time. Ryan's on the Wirral. Ryan, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
It's an answer to the lady asking about the cuteness aggression.
Oh, yes.
My granddad's a psychiatric nurse, or was before he was retired.
Okay.
And basically, it's three chemicals in the brain that we have a massive overload of. Some people have more than others.
Right.
Which is why a husband doesn't get it so much. But it's dopamine, oxytocin off the top of my head, and I can't remember the name of them.
Don't worry about it.
Vasopressin, I think it's called.
And that is, it actually just provides a physical response to something because we're not processing the emotional reality.
So we just sort of go, you're
so cute.
The brain physically can't comprehend why we're finding it so cute, because you've had a massive overload of the chemicals.
And that is all about how much chemicals you produce. So that would perfectly explain why some people have it and some people don't. And why people have different degrees of it. Some people probably spend their whole lives going around squeezing cheeks, metaphorically speaking.
there's a minor link as well. I forget who did the study, but there's a study on it where they think that, obviously, everybody's got one singular trait of autism, and they think that that could be one of them as well within people.
Oh, wow. That's absolutely fascinating. I know you told us, but I'll ask you again. Qualifications?
My grandfather was a psychiatric nurse.
That'll do nicely. Thank you, Ryan. Round of applause.
No, pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, I love that. Is there a word for it as well? I think there was a word for it, although Mustafa sent me a message telling me there's a Punjabi word for it. And I saw his message and I thought, there's no way I'm reading that out. Shall I tell you a secret? If you ever want to get a radio presenter into trouble, then what you do, you pick a moment like this and you say, actually, James, there is a Punjabi word for aggressive cuteness. It is, and then you insert a word that actually means something really, really rude. So, no, I shouldn't have told you that, should I? Let's keep that one under wraps. Paul's in Worcester Park. Paul, question or answer?
Oh, got an answer.
You take
your phrase.
Come on, then.
Yes, James, you must have heard of the old Fraser novels, haven't you?
Yes, George MacDonald Fraser novels about Flashman. Yeah, I love them, actually.
Yes, yes. Well, he mentions about the lisp and the pronouncing of the R in that.
Does he?
Yes, he does. It's a late Georgian, early Victorian affectation, purposely done by the aristocracy, mainly by army officers, to basically just say that they're part of one club. Flashman himself actually puts on the R.
Really?
MacDonald Fraser mentions it in the novels, like why. And I'd never heard the bit about the passive-aggressive thing I think you just mentioned there. That would probably explain maybe why more army officers did it than anyone else.
Yeah, but that's affected. And the question's about, I mean, how does it then end up getting handed down?
I'm not really sure if it does end up getting handed down so much.
But we associate it with poshness.
You can do. I mean, I've got a lisp, and I was always told that apparently if you're not breastfed, you have a lisp. I don't know whether that's true or not.
Well, were you breastfed?
I don't know. Like you, I was adopted, so I don't know. But it is something I've heard that people who weren't breastfed tend to have a lisp.
I can't even hear your lisp.
I can't. If I normally I get the mic taken out of me quite a lot.
I'm sorry.
Quite
to
a lot
that.
For it. I know. I can live with it. But and I've read in social history as well that it was an affectation. It was purposely put on.
Answered the question actually. I think Sally, whether she's been watching old films or been watching Sharp or Flashman films or whatever it might be. I mentioned Jeeves and Wooster actually. Hey, that would fit, wouldn't it? So when Fry and Laurie made their version of Jeeves and Wooster, which is the only one I got immediate reference to in my own memory, I think, and my memory may be playing tricks on me, that a few of the characters, and they were all posh really, had speech impediments, it was a way of conveying poshness because it was an affectation during the Georgian era.
Yes, and the charge of the Light Brigade. I think the guy there, the actual colonel, when he goes on about the brown bottle, I think he has the R bit in his language. But it was, from my understanding, from Fraser, it was more an affectation of the military, of officers with the military, because it was a sort of understated.
Yeah, but the officer class, though, not the squaddies, would it? It'd be the officer class.
No, not the squaddies. The officer class. It was sort of understated masculinity. It's almost like I can afford to sound a bit feminine because I am so masculine.
Because I'm so tough. I love that.
Yeah, so that's my understanding anyway. Did you ever read the Flashman novels?
Yeah, I did. I think I've read all of them. What I like about those is that you learn a lot of history, even while you're basically reading a rollicking comedy thriller, aren't you? But you learn loads of history as well.
Yes, he was so good.
Qualifications? Read a lot of George MacDonald Fraser?
I like reading a lot of social history. I just like reading, and I'm quite interested in military history as well.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you, Paul. Have a round of applause on me. No, thank you very much. That is it from me for another day. If you missed any of today's show, hang on a minute. If you want to watch the interview that Andrew Marr did with Richard Taylor as a sort of counterpiece to my interview earlier with Steve Coogan, you can watch it on YouTube, apparently. You lucky people. If you missed any of today's show, then you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player, where you can rewind live radio, as ditto the LBC app. Stay on top of the top stories and opinions. Put your news categories in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio. and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. Can we give the game to Paul at the end there? If I was in a really childish mood, I'd give it to Roger. Roger. But I'm going to give it to Paul because he was so charming. And also because people tease him about his speech impediment. So, who's laughing now? He's got a free Mystery Hour board game. Download the official LBC app from your app store now. It's free. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4. Now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Can I just say about the lisping thing? Have you noticed, and I think it is a uniquely posh thing, I'm doing it as I speak to you. People who only speak with their lower lip.
You're right, they don't move their mouth at all.
Yes.
Did you know that when my father first sent me to private school, he was invited for tea by the headmaster's wife, and she offered him some toast.
Lovely.
And he didn't know what she was talking about. She said, "Would you like some toast?" And he said, very cleverly, being a journalist, he was quite used to being on doorsteps.
Oh, this is a real story.
It's a real story. "Would you like some toast?" And he said, "Well, I'll have some if you're having some."
Ah.
And it was toast.
Toast.
Carry on, Sheila.
With the lower lip. Yes, lovely. Speaking of posh people, a group in favour of scrapping the monarchy is planning a private prosecution against Prince Andrew. And there are increasing reports that Prince William is putting most HRHs on notice when he becomes king, or for when he becomes king. I think he should do this, and I'll tell you why at 3. It relates to his mother, Diana. At 2 are the attacks and murders committed by asylum seekers who arrived here by boat or lorry, changing what you think we should do about the whole issue, changing how you think about the whole issue. But I want to start with Rachel Reeves breaking housing rental rules at a risky time for her politically over tax increases. Are you, much like the Prime Minister, minded to gloss over it or not?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Tory leader Kemi Badenoch has called for the Chancellor to resign if she's committed an offence over the rental of her family home. Rachel Reeves has apologised after she failed to obtain the correct rental licence for the property in South East London. After consulting his ethics advisor, though, the Prime Minister has decided an investigation isn't necessary. Policing and Crime Minister Sarah Jones has told LBC it was an innocent mistake.
Well, look, she moved into 11 Downing Street. We know her family home she rented out through a letting agent. In Southwark, they have a selective licence, landlord licensing scheme. They don't have that in every borough. We used to have one in Croydon. We don't anymore. We might get another one. It changes. She didn't know she needed it. Selective licensing schemes are really good things.
An Afghan national charged over a triple stabbing in West London has been remanded in custody after appearing in court. Safi Dawood is accused of murdering Wayne Broadhurst and trying to kill two others in Uxbridge on Monday. One of the UK's leading online pharmacies has been criticised for selling a weight loss jab to a severely anorexic woman. LBC has learned the patient used an AI-generated image to bypass Newman's checks to buy Wegovy. Tom Quinn is from the eating disorder charity Beat.
We need much tighter regulation in place to ensure that no one with anorexia or any other eating disorder, or indeed any serious mental illness, is able to access these drugs without a thorough mental health assessment having taken place.
Newman's apologised directly to the woman's family and says it will bring in extra verification tools to avoid a repeat. The anti-monarchy group Republic is considering a private prosecution against Prince Andrew. Lawyers have been asked to consider the action over allegations of sexual assault, corruption and misconduct in a public office. He denies wrongdoing and has given up his titles over his links to convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Graham Smith is from Republic.
The police have said they've looked into it, which is not quite the same as a criminal investigation. So what we're trying to do is ensure that it is properly investigated through specialist lawyers. And if there is sufficient evidence to pursue to court, then we will pursue a private prosecution.
And 5 more people have been arrested in the investigation into the theft of crown jewels from the Louvre. The jewels are still missing, though. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 60 points at 96.95. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy, largely dry with bright spells in the southeast. Showers moving into the west and then the north by this evening, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. I was thinking this morning as I was listening to LBC on the radio and getting ready to come into work, what is it about government ministers and houses? And I don't just mean this government and these ministers, but we've seen it before, haven't we, with the expensive scandal and the Duck House and all that kind of stuff and confusion over where you pay your council tax, what your main residence is. We've seen it all before. Angela Rayner lost her job over housing matters, didn't she? And the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has told LBC that she believes Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, should resign if she has committed an offence. Now, the Chancellor has admitted that she failed to obtain the required so-called selective rental licence in order for her to rent out her family home when she and her family moved into Downing Street. So Keir Starmer says an investigation isn't necessary. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark got this reaction from the Conservative leader.
Well, if she has committed a criminal offence, then yes, she should resign. I mean, it's really shocking. And it's obvious why they don't want to have an investigation, because if an investigation would either clear her, if they thought she'd be cleared, then they'd be very happy to have an investigation. This woman is not on top of her paperwork, and she's not able to focus on growing our economy, which is the job that she has. But Keir Starmer said that lawmakers shouldn't be lawbreakers. Those were his standards, his rules. He should apply them to his own front bench. It can't be one rule for them and then another rule for everyone else.
Do you worry that having these high standards will put others off going into politics?
I think that high standards need to be embedded in public office. People need to have faith in their politicians. And that is something that I abide by. The Conservative Party had lots of trouble previously around these issues. I want to make sure that people can see that we are applying high standards to ourselves, that we are a party of integrity. Of course, we've made mistakes before, but under my leadership, things are changing. It is important that the public have faith in those of us who are making the rules for them.
That's Kemi Badenoch. She'll be on with Ian Dale this evening from 7, taking your calls on, no doubt, this subject and many others as well. Lewis Goodall joins me in the studio, presenter of Sundays with Lewis Goodall and co-host of Global's podcast, The News Agents. She's in a politically sensitive time without this. This matter. How much more sensitive have things got for her because of it?
Well, look, I mean, context is everything, isn't it, Sheila, in politics? And obviously this comes off the back of the Angela Rayner affair, where, of course, she had to resign because of a separate, but nonetheless related in a sense, question around property taxation. This is something a bit different in the sense that lots of people might not be aware of this. Everyone knows about stamp duty. They certainly might not be aware of these things. This is something that's become more and more common, generally speaking, in Labour councils, it has to be said. Different local authorities choosing to basically move to a kind of a licensing system around buy-to-let properties. The idea behind this is to regulate them more and to crack down on the question of, or the problem of, slum landlords and make sure all the properties are sort of well rented out and the council can keep an eye on them, etc. Now, what it seems to be in this situation is that when the Chancellor obviously moved into number 11 after the election last year, she rented out her property in South London, unaware that this particular, her local authority in question, Southwark Council, had this licensing scheme. So the question, I think, is...
Something she has publicly...
Something she herself... Yeah. Indeed, and she... I mean, unfortunately, there was a tweet some 10 days ago where she was supporting a similar system in her sort of her own constituency patch in Leeds, in West Yorkshire. So this is obviously embarrassing.